is a kind of tyranny that is unseen and is actually kind of assumed to be valid, like by most people, like, oh, the markets. As if this is the right gauge of whether or not the economy is going well or whether, you know, people are happy or not. That's the real gauge, is are people happy? And people haven't been happy for quite some time, whether markets are up or down. So there's this very strange, it's called capitalist realism, this idea where like all critiques actually incorporate this, the fundamental assumptions of the system into them when they talk about them. That's typically how markets are talked about in America. But the tariff thing is, I think, the purpose of this, and I've been saying this for a while, the problem is...
Newsflash, Rumble is working. Carry
on. Okay. In America, I don't know if you remember the story from last year or so about Springfield, Ohio, which was a town that was being touted by the whole media, conservative and liberal alike, Republican and Democrat politicians alike, as a success story in American economic revitalization. So it was a former Rust Belt town in Ohio, industrial town, relatively big. It had a population of 40,000, of course. Now it has a population of 60,000, which they inherently saw as a success story. But again, if the assumptions still being made by the system are those of individuals and workers as sort of fungible economic inputs. So what we got is 20,000, literally, town of 40,000 people, economically depressed town by every, it's actually really kind of a small city. Every stretch, definitely an economically depressed area, not a particularly happy place, kind of a dreary place. But the new 20,000 people, they were Haitian. And they were set there up there by a deliberate program incentivized by the federal government and with the cooperation of immigration authorities, the State Department, and some recruiting firms that were actually ethnically specific to recruit Haitians to jobs with firms, manufacturing firms and other firms in Springfield, Ohio. And they did raise on paper the town's economic prospects. But of course, what they had was this the wave of crime. The local people don't like the newcomers. There was a bus crash where some school children were killed by a Haitian driver who crashed into a school bus and killed some children. And this caused, of course, the federal government deployed FBI agents to the town to make sure no racial strife happened in the wake of this, as they always do. And all media, right and left, touted this as the magical revitalization of Springfield, although not without some hiccups, you know, as they say, like not without its hiccups. And so I think this is what's going to happen to all of America. I think that they don't have, or they don't trust the white American worker, or they just objectively aren't enough. Because if you are taking the productive capacity of China and the imports of, like, let's assume this works, right? Let's assume they act, because the assumption is here, the idea is not actually a trade war to get other countries to lower tariffs, because even if other countries lower tariffs, there's still a trade deficit. In other words, they import more to us than we export to them, so they want to tariff that anyway. I think this is a genuine effort to reshore manufacturing and economic productive capacity to America. But that doesn't mean anything about reshoring jobs, prosperity, and a functional economy to white people in America. What that means is we are going to have, and Trump has promised this. If you listen to him, he promises it in all the speeches. He makes the case to the business class. He makes the case to those Wall Street investors, to the hedge fund managers, and to the CEOs of the corporations. He makes the case to them. We know you need people. We're going to get you the people. We're going to bring so many people in. They're going to come legally, and they're going to love America, which of course means they're going to love Israel. Or at least they're going to be willing to shut the hell up and not say anything about Israel, or they're going to be indifferent to Israel, which is, you know, frankly, probably most of third world masses. So what we're going to get is more, I absolutely think if this works, and I'm not sure it will, but this is what they want to do, more physical plant here. But that physical plant, those factories, those new things, that either the old ones will be refurbished and reworked, you know, old buildings may be revitalized and things should in theory be good. It's going to be an inundation of third world labor into America because they're not going to want to raise wages. The issue here is China, as a massive holder of the world's manufacturing capacity, not a politically reliable entity, not completely under the control of the, you know, the Jewish American empire. So they want to get that. It's too, they're too powerful. Too much manufacturing is there that gives them too much power. We need to take some of that back. We made a mistake. We let too much go. Short-term incentives, we sent too much manufacturing capacity there. I mean, the Chinese told us it was stupid what we were doing. They're like, yeah, well, why are you? Thanks for investing in our country. Thanks for making us an industrial powerhouse. That was very nice of you. But I think this is trans. Not only am I, this isn't things, I'm not speculating. They say that this is what they're going to do. Trump says this is what he's going to do. He talks about wanting to expand H-1B visas. Trump has a terrible record on what are also called I think it's H-1A. Don't quote me exactly. There's something called a temporary agricultural worker visa, which is actually, these are the kind of like the South American laborers that come in to work on farms and such. And he's always had a terrible record on letting mass numbers of people in under this visa. He plans to expand the, you know, legal immigration for visas for people to come and objectively in connection with this tariff policy, where he says we're gonna bring American manufacturing back, and we're going to need people, and we're going to bring those people in, and we're going to make sure that all these companies have these people. So that's what's going to happen. That's the plan here, I think.
So, you see, I think the tariffs are the actions of a man who doesn't have a clue what he's doing, and I'll explain why. From an economic point of view, tariffs can be a very good thing for the domestic economy. But they can only be a good thing for the domestic economy if you have a substitute product. And what I mean by that is, if you're importing, let's say, DVD players from China, right? And I say DVD players because I'm plucking something out of the air. Obviously, you don't think anyone even buys DVD players anymore, but let's say you're importing DVD players from China. If you put 40% on DVD players, that's absolutely fantastic if there is an American-made DVD player, which is a direct substitute for the Chinese-made DVD player. However, if nobody in America makes a DVD player, then that just hurts American people. And the problem is, America has become a consumer-based economy rather than an export-based economy. And what Trump is doing is bringing in tariffs before he's laid the groundwork.
Yep.
Because of the way that American politics and British politics and French politics and German politics is structured, the illusion of democracy, no one's in long enough to ever lay the groundwork to build up manufacturing to the point where tariffs can be imposed. Now, the perfect example of a man that did this is Vladimir Putin. He's had basically decades in power. Mm-hmm. And during his time in power, he built a manufacturing base. The manufacturing relied on resources that were mined in Russia. The power was produced by gas, electricity, coal that was, again, generated or mined in Russia. And the national debt was reduced and reduced and reduced. And economists called it Fortress Russia because it was a place where fundamentally, if there were sanctions imposed or if there was economic strife elsewhere in the world, Russia could pull up the drawbridge and function completely and go elsewhere with their exports and it wouldn't matter. Whereas if you're a consumer-based economy and you don't produce anything, you are then held hostage by companies that sell you goods. Because if all of a sudden they say, well, our country's not selling you goods anymore, well, you starve or you go without. And I think Trump's looked at Putin and he's looked at Russia and said, we want to do the same. We want a powerful manufacturing base and we want a fortress economy and we want to be exporters again. But you can't do that unless you've laid decades of groundwork. Yeah. So his rash actions are basically just going to drive up inflation to a ridiculous level in America, hurt normal families. And what he hasn't factored in, and this is the key thing, and this is what he should have factored in, because look, he's not a complete idiot and he does know his way around a business, but just because you know your way around a business doesn't make you an economist. And here's the big issue with modern companies: decades long contracts are often signed. So companies will sign a contract for 10 years of manufacturing in America. Oh, sorry, in China. Now, obviously, if you're signing a decades-long contract, you can't just tear that up. You can't just do away with it. And even if you did, Would there be a factory with the right tooling, the right manufacturing process, access to the right materials in America that could immediately meet your capacity? Well, the answer is no. You know, if you do just something small, let's say you do something small, all you do is produce a case for a mobile phone. That's a very simple thing. It's not like producing the phone where you need thousands of parts. It's just a case. To get that produced, you need very specific tooling that produces your case with the right products that go into it, with the right materials that go into it, should I say. Now, to get that tooling can cost tens of thousands of pounds. And if you say to the company in China, well, screw you, I'm going to America, not only is there going to be a tearing up of a contract which could cost you tens or hundreds of thousands, but also you've then got to pay for all the tooling in a factory that you don't even know exists. This can't be done overnight. And I think what Trump has done is he said, right, I want to be a fortress economy that has manufacturing power and an export base. And he's right. That's what America needs to be. That's what America used to be. But the problem is successive generations or successive governments have completely dismantled that. And you can't just turn it around in 3 months with a couple of executive orders. And by doing this at a time when there are inflationary pressures, the people he's going to really hurt are actually normal middle class Americans whose purchasing power is going to drop so far. And at that point, maybe he does us a favor. Maybe things get so bad in America because of his stupid tariffs that people rise up and go mad and say, look, we've had enough. We're overthrowing the government. And basically, we're starting something new. Maybe that happens.
I doubt it. And also, I wonder, even if that happened, would that would what they would put in place actually wouldn't really be any better? But, you know, because I don't know that the people in America have the sort of ideological foundation on which I would trust them with an uprising either. But I totally agree with that. And it does feel like there's some kind of shock therapy. The other question is, and the people have searched around for this, is there some other agenda? Is this a bluff? Is he holding these countries hostage for some other political thing? Probably like related to Israel, let's be honest, as everything he does is. But is there some thing he wants from them, and that if they give it, then it will be all over? Like he will cancel it. And because Trump, man, this guy is so mercurial that he will cancel something completely and pretend like it was always the best idea in the world to do that, even if it's something he was shilling for just the day before. I don't know. I do think, I also think, you know, the way out might be that some of these countries will say, okay, we will drop tariffs, reciprocal tariffs on U.S. goods, and then boom, we're back to free trade. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I'm giving you what I think is a theory of why they would actually want some kind of economic reset.
And well, I've got a good one for you. Apparently, one of the tariffs that China's going to impose as a retaliatory tariff is a complete ban on all American Hollywood films, because Hollywood films now...
Good policy!
It is! It's good for their people, and if it kills Hollywood, that's a good thing. But they've said that, well, we don't need the films. But
they can make their own, and they do, yeah.
The films need China. So the Chinese market is now huge. At one time, American Hollywood films were ruled by the domestic box office. So your domestic box office would be the lion's share of money that Hollywood would make. But now it's actually the international market.
Yeah.
And China have become the dominant force in the international box office. And when these big American films go to China, they often... So I'll give you a great example. The World of Warcraft film didn't do very well in America. Went to China, the Chinese loved it because it was sort of European high fantasy. It was a natural tale of sort of swords and sorcery. And they were like, oh, we love this. And it saved the studio. It made a lot of money because what it did in China. And if you take away that Chinese market, Hollywood is dead. So, I mean, in a way, if Trump has effectively killed Hollywood through his tariffs, again, I'm not shilling for Trump, but if he causes absolute chaos, you know, it's like if somebody accidentally causes a storm and that blows down your enemy's house. Well, it's not the end of the world, is it?
Yeah. No, I totally understand that. I the question is, I wonder, like, I often don't believe that Trump is necessarily fully directing the actions of his administration. I think to some extent he probably is. But I do look at his commerce secretary, right, who's this sort of grinning Jewish, Howard Lutnick is his name. He was the CEO of an investment firm called Cantor Fitzgerald. He actually survived the World Trade Center, which is interesting when his whole office full of people was killed. People like to, you know, posit ideas about that. I would only hesitate in saying that his brother was in the office when the tower went down. So it could have literally actually been a coincidence why he wasn't there. But it doesn't change his status as an oligarchic Jew. And the videos just came out from 2 days ago where Netanyahu was in America meeting with this guy to basically some pretense of talks about trying to get the tariffs on Israel dropped because they did impose a tariff on Israel. Of course, the total tariff on Israel amounts to about $3.4 billion, which is, you know, significantly less than the amount of money we just send them. We already sent them $14 billion this year, in addition to the Yemen bombing operation, which has already cost over $1 billion, which doesn't even factor in the cost of the operations on the Diego Garcia Island in the Pacific, which is like a joint British-American airbase, which we're using to supply the bombings for the Middle East. We're moving, funny enough, talking about China, we're moving assets out of South Korea to Diego Garcia to bomb Yemen and possibly bomb Iran, which is costing us God knows how much. And Israel is getting that for free because it's all for them. But so the tariff thing, it's like, and even then they get a special meeting with the Commerce Secretary, who's Jewish, to talk about getting those tariffs lifted on them, which I expect will happen. But, you know, so this guy is out there shilling for this. Like, he's out on TV, and when market analysts and capitalists and even many Jews who are Wall Street people and commentators and financial markets and stuff ask him, like, what the hell is going on? He's like, trust the plan. Just trust it. We have a plan. Trust it. And so it makes me nervous that this guy does have a plan. So, like, you know, because this guy 100% is not on our side. There's no question about that. So I do wonder, you know, and the funny thing is when something Trump always triggers this kind of speculation, because sometimes the things he does are just like on the surface, like what, why are you doing that? And it doesn't. And so people do the 4D chess thing. What's the other agenda? What's the thing he's trying to get? And you know, I don't know. And so after years and years of sort of trying to figure some of this stuff out, I acknowledge quite often I don't know what it is. And sometimes I assume that maybe they just do want to do this. I think that there is a desire amongst the people that run America to have some kind of economic reset and bring this global bring a significant amount of global manufacturing back to America. They can have more political control over the production process because they feel like they've outsourced too much. They've gone too far and they want to correct this and retrench. And it would make sense that they would want to do this. The thing you're saying is absolutely right, though. You are doing it. You're putting the cart before the horse. You don't do the prep work. And this is a decades-long process because so much has been lost. So much has been sent elsewhere. And the immediate instinct of any company, for as long as I've been alive, was not to do any physical plant in America. The America is where you have your software staff or your office staff, you know, your sales staff and things like that are here. And increasingly, they don't even want to have that here. They're just putting that in India, you know? And so it's like, you know, what are we even doing here? Like, what do we even do here? You know, like that movie Office Space, like, what is it you do here? And you ask this about, like, the American economy generally, and it's like, nobody can tell you. But yeah.
You ask this. When I was a kid in geography, and I did both the GCSE and A-level geography, I remember, you know, being taught we were a manufacturing economy, but we're shifting to a service sector economy, and things are going to be made overseas, but we'll be the ones designing them. We'll be the tech industry. We'll be this, we'll be that. And everything they said we were going to be has been eroded in about a decade or so, thanks to offshoring jobs and the booming Indian tech industry. That's basically it. So everything we were meant to be, all we are now is consumers. And if you're a consumer-based society, all you've really got, you know, is shopkeepers, Deliveroo drivers, Amazon delivery drivers, And you've got a population which is increasingly, you know, suckling off the teat of the state, being given more and more sort of fun bucks to spend on their Amazon deliveries, which keep the Chinese factories in, you know, in business. But the fact is, you're not reversing that horrible situation in a couple of months. And what's more, Trump nor anybody in the West is going to call out any of the people that got us into this mess. All the people that got us into this mess, they've all been pensioned off. They're all living good lives somewhere, laughing at the fact they sold off sort of the family silver of every collective Western nation.
Yeah, I mean, it is like lamenting this. It's funny how you mentioned that, because that's exactly also what the assumption in America was. And that's why I remember the in my lifetime still, the debate about what they called offshoring, which was actually specifically related to white collar employment. The idea of outsourcing outsourcing was the term used. And this was actually a debate about what Americans felt had been promised to them, which is white collar labor, right? You know, middle class labor, office work, intellectual work, you know, things that are theoretically for smarter people or something like this. And then it was being sent to India or in some cases to Eastern Europe. And this was like, people felt that, and I was younger and I didn't fully understand it at like in the 90s, you know, as a teenager, I didn't fully understand the implications, but this is when the debate started. This is when this term outsourcing, I first started hearing it all the time. And it was talked about, and it was so much better back then, even back then, right, than it was now. And even in terms of, you know, the United States has some manufacturing. I mean, there is some, and the funny thing is the relative output of that manufacturing compared to the number of people that work in it is just massive because of how automated it is. But it's like, yeah, to and you know, you drive around America, and I'm sure it's true of Britain. You know, Britain was the first world's first manufacturing economy, actually the first industrial nation. But you know, you drive around, this America used to be a big farm, right? Like, I mean, that's who we were until we industrialized. After you guys did, but there's so much decrepit infrastructure. Like there's so much just like these brick buildings. You probably see in the UK too. These old brick buildings are kind of crumbling. There's some big smokestack outside, and the windows are all shattered and or painted over, and it's totally empty. It's probably a total hazard zone, and you know, police tape around, and not supposed to go inside, or there's homeless people squatting or something. And it's just empty in a lot of particularly more rural parts of America. And you just see this, you just drive through a random town and there's just some building like this somewhere. That just used to be the plant that the people worked at, right? Or one of them. And they're just everywhere and it's constant. And you just, it's like, it's part of the landscape such that you don't even think about it until you do. You realize, you know, that was a place where people used to work. That used to be a place that wasn't some desolate thing overgrown with weeds and, you know, falling apart and being a big eyesore in the middle of this town. It used to just be a place of employment. And it's like, how do you bring that back, right? Because you can't use that. That building needs to be condemned. The only reason it hasn't is they just don't want to put money into condemning it because that costs money too. So
do you condemn yours, you see? Do you know what we do, which is arguably even worse? The old manufacturing plants that we have in the UK get turned into museums. So about a year ago, we took our daughter to a museum in Shefford, which is the Museum of Steelmaking. And you walk around this massive steel plant and there's this black and white footage playing of a former government minister in the sort of late 60s or 70s giving everyone at the plant awards for breaking the country's record on steel production in a single week. These guys were making so much high quality steel, and this was going out to all these little workshops and some big workshops and some giant factories in Sheffield that were making everything that we made out of steel, and it was all stamped with Sheffield steel, and that would go all over the world. And when we were kids, if you were in the cafeteria at lunch, eating your lunch with a knife and a fork, on those, it would be stamped Sheffield steel.
Well, actually gave you metal utensils in school. Amazing.
Well, I mean, now you're basically given a blunted straw and you eat, you know, you suck up
you
your slop.
Suck up
and
your slop.
This, Mike, I don't know if you have this in America. I don't know if you have this in America, but I only found this out today, which is a complete diversion. But in London, this is a real headline from Sky News. Met police to remove hundreds of officers from school. With the Met's decision, London teachers are sounding the alarm that their schools can become more violent. I didn't even know this, but London schools, across London, there are hundreds and hundreds of police officers who are just paid to sit in schools all day and patrol the school so that the kids aren't stabbing each other. I mean, you couldn't give them proper cutlery in the lunch hall now.
No, it's actually the right decision not to let them have metal implements. Like, it actually is. It sounds dystopian and crazy, but no, you don't want to do that. But you also just don't want to have them in your country. But yeah, no, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Oh, yeah, we can't remove them. We can't remove them. What we have to do is make sure that there are no metal spiky objects sold anywhere, because otherwise we just can't live. You know, how Britain survived for the past 10,000 years with spiky metal objects being, you know, available is just beyond me, because now we've got all these people enriching us. We're not allowed spiky metal objects, you know.
I remember, like, the whole, like, oh, you got a license for that screwdriver, mate, thing, right? Like, that is, like, and I found myself, like, totally incredulous that is it true, or is this a meme? You can't just go to a hardware store and buy a screwdriver. That can't be true. You have to be allowed to.
You have to have, there's different things that are basically pointy and sharp, and it's not just limited to knives. And you might be stopped from buying that. You need identification, and a lot of things are sold now in these plastic like special security things. So they've got an alarm on them. So if you go out of the shop without paying for them, there's an alarm. You need a special girl at the till to open them. And if she doesn't open them with the special, like, contraption, which is like this magnetic tool, then you can't get the thing out without smashing it. And all of this is done. And in some shops, you have to go up to somebody and say, can you please get me the knife out of the special seal?
Oh, yeah, we have that too. But
that's not just like a big carving knife or like a samurai sword or something, because they're just banned samurai swords. That is anything. That's just cutlery. So if you say you sent, like, your son out and said, oh, God, it's Christmas Day tomorrow and we've not got the cheese board for after Christmas dinner. But there was a board with some pieces of cheese stuck to it and then a cheese knife. He wouldn't be able to bring that home. You'd have to go and buy it because it's got the cheese knife attached to it.
Crazy. That's wild. Yeah, no, it's sunny. It really sort of depends where you are in America. This isn't by regulation. It's by local environment. So around where I live, which is in a kind of, you know, not really rural, but it's sort of like, I guess rural. It's like a mountainous area, not very well populated, kind of out in the sticks a little bit, although relatively close to civilization. You know, I can go to the hardware store and just buy whatever, right? Screwdriver, anything, doesn't matter. And if I go to the pharmacy, the things are not locked up like that. The joke is always, you know, you walk around the Walgreens or whatever, the Rite Aid in America, and it's particularly the black oriented products that are the ones that will be locked up, and the other things won't be. So that's always a meme and it's a joke, but it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's but that's sort of a field of the issue of tariffs. So I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe some countries will drop their tariffs instead of doing a trade war. They'll actually submit to this but I think if I were to posit a guess as to what they wanted to do, it's what I was saying before. And of course, one of the things is, like, in theory, reshoring is great. In theory, revitalizing American manufacturing is a good idea. But the actual lived experience, the actual experience in America of places where this has been done and experiments in this, you know, I have a friend who was saying already, there is some planned new physical plant in his area. So there is a physical plant being built. There's some manufacturing capacity. He thinks it's for some electronic component. Well, he knows it's for some electronic components going to be built in his area. And already, like, there's no interviews. They're not going around posting, come interview for a job here to the local population. When companies do this in America, when they do put down a plant, when they do lay down the foundations of a factory and cut the ribbon or whatever, and they want to build a manufacturing plant or some other kind of thing here, the labor source is already procured before they drop the first brick goes on to the other. They know where their labor is coming from. They're not going to build a factory and then interview the local population. It is going to go along with the developers coming in attacking or you know, getting favorable zoning regulations for housing from the local zoning boards, which is, of course, they can always pressure them with tax revenues and things like that. You don't want more tax revenues, don't you? Well, we're going to bring in more taxpayers. And so they can get what they was euphemistically called high density housing, which is apartment blocks for third worlders who are going to be the ones staffing up this factory. So it would, in theory, be great. Oh, we're going to bring a manufacturing plant to our town. That's great. We got a lot of people that need work. Well, no, because they're not going to, the white kid graduating from high school isn't going to be asked to interview. He's not even going to know where to go. The recruiting firms, and this happened in Springfield, they had very specific, racially specific recruiting firms that dealt directly when I documented all of this when this was happening. I'm just sort of going off memory here, even to the names of the firms and some of the individuals involved, dealt specifically with the State Department, who was placing these Haitian refugees in the town. And this recruiting firm was specifically run, the advertisement it made to the State Department was, we specifically have cultural fluency in dealing with Haitians. We are the mediator. We can mediate between these Haitians and the companies in the town. And so they then had this monopoly. So white people were excluded from this new job boom in Springfield, Ohio, which was actually generated by this cheap source of labor that was being created. And all of this was being done over the heads or under the noses or behind the backs of the people that already lived there. They didn't know this was happening. They didn't know this recruiting firm and there was a couple of them that they were operating. And we went to their websites and reading what they were saying. And they're specifically talking about cultural fluency in certain populations. It just means Haitian blacks. And so, like, and this is, there's Indians have been known to do this, right? Indians are famous and Sikhs as well. Although Sikhs tend to be just like petty merchants that rip you off at the gas station, and they've got their own little nepotistic network with that. But the Indians have like an actual massive recruiting scam going on, effectively racially solidaristic with themselves recruiting system, where they just, and they work with the government because there are racial incentives for like non-white entrepreneurs, non-white business owners, and then like non-white recruitment and things like that, that they've been taking advantage of. Now, Trump administration has sort of superficially done away with some of that, but I don't really know if they've done away with this thing specifically. So there's all of these incentives to do this. And the companies themselves are like, sure, we'll put a plant down here. We're going to get a tax break from the local government. We're going to get a zoning favor from the zoning board so we can build a high density apartment, which is usually the developers of this Orthodox Jew. So good luck getting Trump administration to say anything about that. I mean, these are literally the people running him. And that's how this works. And so it doesn't really benefit us. It's being done around us. And what it results in is just going to be the third world sweatshop is just going to be in your backyard now. That's what I fear is going to happen. Or at least what they want. Because that to them would be ideal.
Well, look, the thing is, Mike, I would love to say that you're wrong. But you're not. And I'm going to explain why you're not wrong. The last time Britain had a big manufacturing boom in the UK was when the textile industries boomed in the UK.
I know it's going already. But yeah.
And who were the people in those factories? Go to Leicester, go to Burnley, go to any of those northern mill towns.
You know, places
like Halifax.
Pakistanis.
It was all Pakistani Muslims, and in Leicester, it was Muslims and Indians. And they're the people that they're going to bring in. When Trump brings manufacturing back to America, it will be, or if he does, let's say if he does, because there's right. a big...
Which, I'm not there. Clear this is going to work, but yeah.
You know, I mean, let's face it, China is not a country that... is the problem that Trump's also got is at one point, and I've got to admit this, America was the center of the world. If you didn't have America buying your goods, you were dead. But mm-hmm. Russia proved you didn't need America buying your goods to be a healthy country. And there is a very real chance here that China will say, well, actually, we're going to sign trade deals with India, with Iran, with European countries, with Russia, with Eastern European countries, and we'll just freeze America out because they are the world's biggest manufacturer. But let's say America does get its manufacturing base back up and running. I can tell you this now. The people who own those manufacturing plants will want to pay people the lowest wages. They will want to make sure there are the fewest worker rights. It'll just be like Amazon all over again, which is full of migrants who can't speak English, are totally diverse, so will never unionize because that's what they'll want. And Trump is the kind of man that isn't doing this. He's not doing this because he's some sort of patriotic socialist who's like, right, we need a fair wage for the working man of America, and the working man of America needs to do gainful tasks to keep his head above water. He's doing this, and he'll be looking at the bottom line. And the best bottom line for a business owner is cheap labor. Cheap labor that doesn't have the same social demands as American labor. And at the end of the day, I can hear it now because I've heard it a million times before. These guys are doing the jobs that white people won't do. And every time you hear that, what it basically means is that your town or your city is going to be flooded with a load of people you don't want it to be flooded with, because the capitalists want it that way because they make more money.
Yeah. And this is something that conservatives generally support, because the thing that the rhetorical branch that the conservatives have hung themselves on for decades now has always been, we don't like illegal labor. Although, you know, typically when you find there's some farm employing a bunch of illegal immigrants, is some big wig Republican running it. Like years ago, we talked about the case of this girl, Molly Tibbetts, who was raped and murdered by an illegal immigrant in, I think it was Iowa. As it turned out, the farm was run by the brother of the Iowa State, the chairman of the Iowa State Republican Party, right? So it's not like the Republicans actually, this is all rhetorical. They just do it for votes. They don't really care. They never did anything to stop it before. And even Trump didn't do anything to stop it. But even let's say that that's now accurate. We don't want, so you're just, okay, so you're just going to make the immigration legal. You're going to make it legal. And they've said, we want legal immigrants coming through a process. Ones that, and of course, now the funny thing is with the anti-Israel protests and stuff, they actually mean it. They want to subject them to some, or at least draw from populations that they feel won't be doing the kinds of things that sort of these anti-Israel protesters would do. But even that's kind of bogus, because these were elite college students. This is not like a mass labor import thing from out of which where these anti-Israel protesters were coming. These are particularly people selected to be, you know, at elite colleges. And so they're absolutely going to impose an ideological test for that. If you're going to come in and be a student at the elite colleges, you're going to have an ideological test imposed on you. Which is, that's absolutely true. And that doesn't mean it's going to get more white. In fact, arguably, it will get actually browner. And because if you think about this, the argument is, if you're an immigrant, I know it's slightly afield of what we're talking about, but I want to get this out. If you're an immigrant, you don't really have a right to free speech. So we can, depending on what you say, or you don't have a prior right to it, right? You can say what you want until we don't like it, and then we can remove you arbitrarily. That's the message that Trump is sending, right? This is not historically how it's gone. Typically, you expect to come to America and be able to enjoy the right of free speech. But if you say something against Israel, we will. It doesn't, you can say whatever you want about America, white people, hey, we don't care, anything. Israel specifically, or Jews as a people. If you say that, then you get removed. And so what they're going to do, what this does, if you can't do that to an American, can't do that to a white American kid or even a black American kid, right? You can't do that to them because they have a right. They have a birthright to be here. You can't remove them. They have all of you. There's no argument that even a conservative would make that they're not protected by the Constitution. So which kind of student are you going to prefer? You're going to want domestic students? No, you're going to want more totally politically neutered and controlled foreign students to come in and go to the institutions out of which the political functionary class emerges. That's what they're doing right now. They are making sure the next generation of political functionaries is totally loyal to Israel and Jews, and that has nothing to do with increasing the number of white students at elite universities and the number of Americans that are going to these colleges, going to these universities and training to become the next generation of government officials and or corporate leaders or whatever, right? So again, it seems like a good idea. I didn't like the fact that this is all motivated by Israel stuff, which is why I actually sided with the people that were being targeted. I know this was an unpopular position, but I don't buy that you can use the seed of something is important. Where it comes from matters, and you can't take something intended badly and make it
good. Can you get the right outcome? Can you get the right outcome for the wrong reasons?
I don't believe so, and I also just don't want these Zionist Jews to get a win. So,
well, do you know what? I'll just bump in and just say this very quickly. One thing that I always find amazing in countries like America and the UK is if an American flag or a Union Jack is being burnt in the street, there'll be a line of politicians saying, look, it's their right to do this. Yep. Your forefathers fought for the freedom of everyone to burn whatever flag they wanted. Then someone burns an Israeli flag and the police are there in force. Yep. Hate crimes being committed. Yep. You're being deported. You're being locked up. And that's what annoys me. What annoys me is people aren't being stopped from coming into America or Britain for having animus to America or Britain. They're being stopped from coming into America or Britain for having animus towards some Middle Eastern country that controls us, but actually despises us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just don't, I mean, I don't really actually care if people say bad things about America either. It doesn't really bother. I say bad stuff about America because, you know, it's kind of understood in this country that it's your right to do that. Like the, you inherently kind of your birthright as a citizen here and some degree as a guest is, you can say what you want. We have freedom here, right? This is what we're supposed to be about, right? This is what we're supposed to be about. And one of these girls that they got rid of, which is like, this was so weird. Like these people crept up on her with like masks on. And I was expecting it to be like a full SWAT team, like SUV getting out with the, you know, full gear on. They like crept up on this girl with like COVID masks on and like grabbed her. And you know why? She signed an editorial criticizing Israel. I just don't agree with that. You're not going to get me to agree with that. Sorry, it doesn't matter. It also doesn't affect how white the country is in the slightest bit at all, right? And I don't like the precedent that Jews get to just do that. That is up to them, that they get to choose who's in my country, that I don't get to choose what they do. I oppose that idea. But in any case, in terms of the immigration and the manufacturing and stuff, yeah, this is the conservatives have always taken, I'm sure they're doing it in the UK too. In fact, I know they do it. I hear them do it. The legal immigrants who are, and they promise you they're going to be patriotic. They promise you, but they don't really care about that. Now, what's funny is they do care about it in terms of Israel, but if you're drawing the labor source from South America or from Haiti or India, India is on record as being the most Israel-loving country out there. So it's totally, it makes them just extra despicable. Like, it just makes them just extra crappy. It's awful. Just the fact they're already bad and then they just kiss the ass of Israel is even worse. It's the worst population. So that's who they're going to do. And it's just like, I don't want that. I don't want a bunch of, and you're absolutely right about like fulfillment centers. One of the memes in America is like, if they want to put an Amazon fulfillment center in your town or in your area, watch out. You don't want that because one, you don't want this big eyesore of a building. You don't want the increased traffic from all the trucks that are going to be coming through. And you don't want what people don't want to admit. You don't want the kind of people that Amazon hires to work there, which is like Somalians and Haitians and God knows what other countries. You know, this America could literally be anything. I mean, I know the UK is kind of more known like Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, Sikhs, Indians. In America, it's literally anything, right? Like, it could be anything. We take from everywhere. And it's like, you just don't even know. Like, you literally populate a factory with people that were like genociding each other. Like, you bring in Rwandans and you don't care which group. Like, it's just like, it's funny. But, you know, there was this thing around me. Well, there's these signs that
just before
out,
you but... go on, right? I've got to say this. I don't know if you've seen the footage in the UK. You have, sometimes, you'll have a group of men who are obviously like Indian. So they're sort of brown, sort of Indian subcontinent men. And they're walking down the street with bats and clubs and stuff. And you're thinking, who are they going to get? And you sort of normal, you know, assumption would be, are they going after white guys? Is this going to be like the start of it kicking off in Leicester? And then you see the guys coming the other way. And you're thinking, but they look, they're sort of brown guys from the Indian subcontinent.
Yeah,
and then the news report
thing
will be sort of Muslims of Leicester go up against Hindus of Leicester because a Hindu guy came and gave this speech saying, oh, Muslims need to be this. And he's, and you're thinking to yourself, they've employed all these people to work in the same factory. And we think we're under threat, but these guys would kill each other as quickly as they would, you know, they'd rather go at it with each other than they would with us.
Yeah,
none of it's built on with any cohesion in mind.
In America, we have a little bit more experience because blacks who are like citizens, generally speaking, though not all, they've just been doing that forever. Like the experience, in fact, it's kind of expected that if you see a gang of blacks walking down the street, you're like, where's the other gang of blacks coming from the other direction? Because that's what's going on. And not to say blacks absolutely predate on whites and murder whites with a depressingly regular basis, the Austin Metcalf thing and stuff like that, which actually happens all the time, or at least happens, I would say, I think it happens at least one time a day. There's at least one black on white murder every day, if not two or three in America. This has often been documented. There was some Twitter accounts and some websites that were dedicated to documenting these murders, and they do have, and some of this interesting what gets media attention, what doesn't. Largely this is because of the things his father said. Where was I? So one thing that happened around where I live was these signs started going up around people's yards on the side of the road that's like, water not warehouse. And I didn't know what that meant, but I could kind of guess, right? So I looked into it and I found that there was a dispute with like the county zoning board or something like that over putting a large warehouse fulfillment center at this site in the county. And people were opposed to it, but it's so funny. And this is something conservatives attack, usually like liberal whites, for doing, is they say that you are actually racists. You are actually white supremacists, that you are hiding your racism and your white supremacy behind some environmental thing, some concern about the water source, because there's some legitimacy to this critique, but I just side with the liberals because it's like the conservatives want business at all costs, right? This big business stuff. You want that way. We need that capital. We need that money coming in. I'm like, yeah, but you don't need the people that come with that. And of course that's not something liberals want to focus on, but let's be honest. You don't want your nice little community disrupted by this thing coming in and the people that you don't know, and you know it's not going to be locals, and you know that it's going to create a whole big thing. This time around they won, but it's so funny because it's going to pollute like the water resource. I was like, no, it's probably not. I mean, or if it is, that's not anything that really matters. Like, let's be honest, you just don't want it here. And I side with you, and I'm willing to go with it. Water not warehouse. Sure, let's do it. But like, you know, the conservatives love to attack this stuff because, like, these anti-business, communist, privileged, white liberals always doing. Like, look, they want that stuff. And it is funny, man. People will be like, dude, the fortunes of the wood grouse are going to be negatively impacted by this new. And I'm like, dude, we don't actually know what is going on here. Like, and man, people will go, they will scream at each other at county meetings or town meetings. They will be like going at it on this stuff. But in the end, you know, a lot of times they win, man. Sometimes this kind of local activism wins. And so you get to something called the YIMBY movement, which means like, because there's the whole NIMBY thing, not in my backyard, meaning something I would lie. I don't care if someone else has to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it, which is a critique of this kind of attitude. This thing called the YIMBY movement, which is a transparently Jewish project out of like Manhattan, meant to like propagandize people to accept like new development projects, which is just Jewish capitalism, like pressuring you to change how your community is. And so I tend to support every reactionary anti-development project in any community. And I always tell my people listening, and like, you know, if there's something like that, go and vote. If you live, you have some kind of right to vote on those kinds of things in your community. If you're a property owner or a resident, go vote against that crap. Go vote to uphold what conservatives are going to come in and call racist zoning laws. Go vote to maintain that. Because in some sense, they're actually right. In some sense, they are actually correct. And the white liberals doing it absolutely don't want to ever acknowledge it, but who cares on some level? I mean, it would be nice if they did, and you can try and reach out to them. Sometimes people have with some success. But in the end, the principle is the same, and we just don't want this thing here because I'm glad that got defeated. I don't want that. I'm already seeing enough brown faces. And I live in a county that was like 95% white, but this is changing and is going to keep changing. This is the whitest place I've ever lived in my life, by the way. I've never lived in a place this white. I go to the supermarket and I barely see a brown face. That's a totally unique experience for me, generally speaking, where I've lived. But, you know, it's, That's I don't expect that to last. I've already seen it change in just the 5 years I've lived here. So, I mean, this is, I just don't have, I'm not optimistic about the idea of reshoring. I mean, Springfield, Ohio was just a particular famous case. And I think that's sort of the general experience that we can expect if they do this kind of reshoring. If there's some other agenda, I just don't know what it is. I can't predict. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But yeah.
Well, I was going to talk a little bit today about the murder of the American footballer.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And we were going to talk about, but I want to raise something else as well while we're on today, because it's been a particularly bad day today. And there was a couple of things I was going to talk about. Obviously, Stripe have screwed Odyssey over, and you know, nobody who uses Odyssey can take donations anymore. But BitChute has effectively been outlawed in the UK and have sort of shut down their ability for anyone in the UK to not to use the site. UK content creators can still upload content, but it can only be viewed by people outside of the UK. Because BitChute have been forced into this position by the new Online Safety Act, because the Online Safety Act is so oppressive and so sort of over the top with the way it polices websites that share content from a variety of users, that the fines that were going to be levied against them were so high that it was cheaper for them just to cut off the flow of information to the UK than it was to actually comply with the act. And this isn't just affecting people like BitChute. This is, I've got a really interesting bit of information for you. The hamster forum, an online forum for people who own pet hamsters, was also forced to close to the online due to the Online Safety Act. The hamster forum just could not comply with the new legislation, and to quote them, they said, "It's with huge sadness that the forum was closed on the 16th of March 2025 due to the requirements of the new legislation, the Online Safety Act. While this forum has always been perfectly safe, we were unable to meet the compliancy. The care guide articles are still available to view on this page. Da, 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 da. All former memberships have been deleted, removing all personal information as per GDPR." And there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of forums hosted in the UK, content creation sharing sites, which can't meet with the Online Safety Act's requirements because they're so far reaching. And it's basically going to stop all flow of information in the UK, except for big sites like Facebook, YouTube. All it's going to do is place all the power in a few, in the hands of a few sites which are aggressively anti-free speech.
Yeah, and that's the intent, I would argue. That's the intent. Because who knows what kind of stuff, who knows what could get up to, what people could get up to on the hamster forum. I mean, you don't know. Like, and I'm not even joking. Like, they don't know. And, you know, this process has already been happening, generally speaking, where independent websites, people just don't go to them. And the idea, depressingly just true, the idea of, like, going on other social media platforms to promote, like, sharing links to your site on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, whatever it might be, it just doesn't work. Like, people, those sites are, have been increasingly geared as attention sinks, so people don't leave them. Like, we get... I go on Twitter, just, I don't even bother. First of all, I'm not allowed to put the right stuff that is on Twitter, despite Elon Musk's supposed free speech thing, right? We are still blocked. And it was him that did it. Jack Dorsey didn't do it. Jack Dorsey did not. Now, TRS articles or links could not be embedded. Like, you wouldn't show the thumbnail or something, but they would post, right? Yeah. It would just be a text link and you could click on it. At the very least, it was Musk when he took over that we were totally banned. Totally banned, as was the National Justice Party website. So all of that stuff was just blanket banned. Like, you couldn't send links to it. And, you know, he also did it like Substack, but that was some petty like thing with him. Like, the point is this, just, yes, they designed those sites so that people go to them, and natural behavior patterns had already made it so people weren't really clicking out of them anymore to go look at other content. Google search is unusable. Google search is actually geared to make you do another search, which then generates another page of ads. So they get more revenue because they get more impressions on the ads that they serve you when you actually do a search. So it actually is designed to frustrate you into doing another search. it used to be that you could find what you wanted with some very well-placed keywords in your searches. No guarantee you're going to find a damn thing. We've also been banned from Google search. You can't Google search the right stuff that isn't and get our site. You can get Jewish sites attacking our site, but you have to just know the actual URL and type it in. And that's been like that for years, right? And the Twitter thing has been like that for years. It's like 4 years going on now that you couldn't post links to us. But even so, all of these attention sync sites, which are like taking advantage of human psychology and research that these people have done into human psychology and how attention span works, are just people just don't leave them anyway. But nonetheless, even people who did enjoy, like old school people who did enjoy these small time little websites, even totally non-political ones, it's just all going away, and it's totally corporatizing the whole thing, and it's just gonna be a few things that are being provided for. I mean, I know that they had this political problem with TikTok. Seems like they managed to solve it, because I know that the pro-Palestine content on TikTok is not nearly as prevalent as it used to be. It's still there, but it's also there was an element of fad to some of that when it was very popular to do, and a lot of the people doing it weren't necessarily totally committed to it. And that's unfortunate, but nonetheless, like, this was a big political problem, and you know, they kind of sometimes, man, you think Jews are up against a wall, and man, they pull it a year later, they pull it out of the fire. It's quite, you know, it's wild how they do it. You gotta give the devil his due, I guess, although I'm not really giving them any due, but I'm just saying, like, you don't underestimate them, because there's things that they have accomplished in their own cause in the last year that have absolutely blown me away. It's kind of almost depressing. And, you know, I don't know. It's just people got to sign up for your entropy, man. They have to do it. Like, you have to support the content. You have to do it.
Well, the thing that gets me, Mike, is I am the most deplatformed man in the UK. There's no person in the whole UK who has lost as many bank accounts, who's been pushed off as many platforms, who has been harassed, who's had their families harassed as much as I have. Now, look, that's not to say other people haven't been harassed. I know they have. Tommy Robinson's lost bank accounts. He's been pushed off things. Even Nigel Farage has lost bank accounts. But at this point, if you haven't lost a bank account and you're a nationalist in the UK, you're either not doing a good enough job or you work for the state. That's just the way it is, you know.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, I'm the last guy in the UK that will host debates on things like National Socialism, that will platform people like Germar Rudolph and talk about his work. I'm the last person that could have somebody like you on that will deal with people at TRS, because the UK has become so locked down.
Yeah.
That people either run away and give up, or they completely reevaluate their positions and sell out. And then all of a sudden you've got guys who 5 minutes ago were talking the talk, and now they're running organizations where internally they outlaw the criticism of Israel or even work with leading pro-Zionists on the Twitter sphere, because that will make sure they don't lose their payment gateways and their pipeline to money. Whereas myself, I've been doing this now for a number of years. I'm 44. I've got a wife and two children, and everything is on the line so I can keep doing this and keep spreading the truth and still working with people. But it gets harder and harder, because no matter how hard they kick me, they think I deserve kicking even more and even harder. It is terrible. But look, we're going to do the super chats now. A lot of people have been very generous. Remember, you can go over to Odyssey. If you want to super chat, if you want to support my work, please go over to Entropy. Please consider making a super
chat. So is Odyssey just cut off now? There's no grace period?
Nope. Odyssey, wow. Odyssey were told that they had a period that they had to leave Stripe, but Stripe would give them the grace to get another payment system in place. They were building this payment system. They announced basically how it was going to work, that it was being coded, and they were told that they could have an extension until they were ready. And yesterday, when I queued this stream on Odyssey, one guy gave two $5 super chats, which we'll start off with, because they're the last ever super chats that will come through Odyssey in this format using Stripe. And then today I got a message just before I was sitting down for dinner, And it was from a friend who hasn't donated for a while, actually, and said, look, he said, have you fallen out with me or something? I said, why would I have fallen out with you? And he said, well, you blocked me from sending you donations. And I said, why would I block you from donating to me? That's mad. And he said, well, I can't donate. And I said, well, that's really worrying, because I've never, ever blocked anyone from making a donation. And I don't even think you can. You know, if even if somebody hates you, they can send a, you know, a super chat.
And those are the people I particularly encourage to send me money, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, we all get people sending, you know,
the people who hate me particularly should send money. Yeah, absolutely. And,
you know, one of those things. So I was like, well, I'm going to check this out. So I went straight to my Odyssey, and the little green dollar symbol was now black, and I knew that was bad. And then I started checking other people's, and Red Ices had gone, and White Rabbit Radios had gone, and Devon Stacks had gone, and I'm looking through. But then some other people's hadn't. So Joel Davis was still green, and I was thinking, well, why is he green? Laura had gone, but Patriotic Alternative was green, and I'm thinking, why would they keep PA but not that? And then I reached out, and Odyssey have just released a statement saying that without warning and against the prior agreement of you've got, we'll give you, you know, find someone else, but you know, you've got time until you've got that. We're not just going to break with you. Stripe have just screwed them over, pulled the plug without telling them, and Odyssey is now in its current state completely demonetized and floating without an income.
It's not the first time, but yeah, but even their payment they were going to make was some crypto thing, and it's just
no. What it was, it was very similar to the old DLive system. So DLive had its own currency of lemons, and you would go inside, buy like $100 lemons, and $100 of lemons would be it would break it down to like a cent per lemon, so it would be something like 10,000 lemons. And then you could give people lemons, which could then cash out for real world money. But the thing was, you would obviously set a minimum limit for a super chat. So if somebody sent me 1,000 lemons, that would be £10, which would be, yeah, that's cool. But if somebody sent me 10 lemons, it would be like 10 pence. So I'm not going to do a 10 pence super chat, but it'd be, you'd have to have a sensible minimum. But some people were making good money through DLive at one point. So it can be done. It's just basically like a virtual currency. And Odyssey had a system that they were going to roll out, which gave you a USD stable coin. So you've got a dollar.
I see, yeah.
Yeah. And it was, I was all up for that, because it would be much, much harder for them to lose that. And I think that's what every dissident should do. I'm not one of these dissidents who's a half-assed dissident who's like, oh, come on, please let me play nicely. Come on, state, please. I'll be good if you want me to be. Like some people are. I actually believe in building alternative networks, parallel societies and systems that the state can't interfere with. If you rely on the state for things like your payment gateway, etc., eventually they will come for you, and you've always got that weakness. So I quite like the idea of cryptocurrency, and people can donate via crypto. All the crypto links are in the description below. You know, if you really want to help me out, give me some Bitcoin, give me some Monero. But look, we're going to do the super chats because people have been generous, and for sort of the sake of record keeping, here are the last two ever Odyssey super chats. Forest Elephant gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, since Mike enjoyed my super chat from the last show, he was on about how one of the visual tropes of Holocaust propaganda is showing you black and white photos of puppy-eyed Jews wearing newspaper boy hats as if they're cosplaying as Fievel from An American Tale. Another trope is the constant use of violin music in Holocaust documentaries and films, or a survivor being fluent in obviously emotionally manipulative instrument to where I'd like to call passing their SHIT test on belief in the Holocaust, smashing the violin. I think when you produce a movie about the Holocaust, there are certain things that there has to be.
Yeah, and it's like there's a particular Jewish violinist I think they use for this. And of course, the soundtrack to Schindler's List, it's very funny. It was actually done by John Williams, who generally I like. I think he did Superman, which is a great soundtrack.
But he also did Star Wars.
Star Wars, Superman, Jurassic Park, classic great themes. But whenever you find a listicle online, John Williams' greatest film scores, like Schindler's List is there. And I'm like, are you joking? No, That's not one. No, his best. I think Superman is the best one. That's my personal favorite. But and the movies are crap, but the soundtrack is great. Star Wars pretty good. Jurassic Park fantastic, great soundtrack. And there's other ones too. I think did he do Indiana Jones?
He did Jaws. He did Jaws.
Okay. Yeah. So there you go. So yeah, he just does some of the best ones. He's actually not Jewish. But yeah, he did. This is like Schindler. I don't even remember it, but I'm sure it's just not something I want to listen to. There was a story in Israel several years ago, I remember, where the Israeli guards that were doing the border guards between, you know, the Palestinian territories and controlling the movements of Palestinians and stuff like that took a Palestinian violin player's violin and they smashed it for fun. Like they were searched, they absolutely do this kind of stuff, right? Just totally capriciously. They never get in trouble. There's no, theoretically there's rules against it, but they never get in trouble. And there was pictures of this that ended up in the Israeli media. And these Jews were like pulling their hair out, like, oh God, this is, this is the image that we use. How could we now be projecting this image to the world? It's supposed to be the evil German border guard smashing the Jewish violin. And I'm like, no, you people are what you've always said that we are. Shut up. You do that stuff. So
I'm just looking through his discography as we're speaking. And he has really had.
He's really good. Yeah,
he is. John Williams is really, really fantastic composer. So yeah,
no, those are great. They're great compositions. Some of them are bad movies, but the composition is great. Just Schindler's List. I doubt that that's something anybody really wants to listen to. But just like sad, mournful, atonal.
It's really slow and boring. It's a particularly boring.
Just like the movie, frankly. Honestly, except you know. Except for the
it just goes on. It just goes on and on and on and on.
And it's just like absurd. I mean, there is that is some of the most abusive, emotionally manipulative propaganda ever produced. I mean, that movie should. I would actually ban that movie. That's dangerous. But yeah. Anyway,
when are you going to come and do a film review with us, Mike?
I would love to. I don't watch movies that much anymore, so
you get to pick the movie. You get to pick the movie.
Yeah, sure. I have to think about it. So I have to think. I can't think of a movie. I don't think
we were going to do a movie review this Sunday. If anyone wants to come on, I'm looking for somebody who wants to come on, but no one's contacted me. We're going to actually review the original Disney Snow White and compare it to the modern hellscape Zegler Snow White. So
I don't even know if I could sit through the new one.
No, I'm not asking you for that one, Mike.
I know. It's been so long. So I have seen the original, of course. And
I'm watching the original with my daughter tomorrow or Friday. Yeah. And then me and the wife are going to watch the hellscape one. Something like 3 a.m. when the baby's crying and won't go to sleep. So
experience. It's not even just like Snow Brown. It's all not only her. Like there's plenty of other like racial swapping casting decisions and things like that. Like the woodsman is a coal black, you know, African, which has been very little commented on. This is something I heard. I don't know if I, but I trust the people that told me this. But this is something that's been by the sort of anti woke. Movie review crowd on YouTube who managed to, you know, eternally have more and more milquetoast criticism of these things, like Critical Drinker and these type of guys, you know, like they're just missing the point on everything. But they don't even mention that. They call it Snow Brown. They don't, what about Wood Brown? Brownsman, not the woodsman, but anyway, a blacksmith. They should have been a blacksmith, right? Because he's just totally black. Anyway. anyway. So, yeah. No, I agree. The violin thing is a thing that they do. Yeah, smash the violin, but not the Palestinian guy's violin. Don't smash that one. But yeah.
Right. Well, next super chat. I have Odin. It gave $30. Said thanks for the help on Telegram. Well, I'm pleased to be always there to help people who need advice, etc. And obviously, that's what I spend a lot of the time doing. A lot of people don't know this, but. You know, I do people's CV. Well, I talk about it, but I do people's CVs. I help people with other things. If you've got a problem, whatever it is, give me a call. I'm usually here to help people. So the only thing I say, though, is this. If you come to me and I spend 2 hours giving you advice, I'm expecting you to put that advice into practice. I'm not expecting to hear from you in 2 weeks in the same position, having done none of the things I told you to do, because that's.
I actually can't tell you how often this would happen to me. And it wouldn't be about like life advice and things like that, but typically it would actually be about things like I've been doxxed. What do I do? My employer got a letter from Antifa. What do I do? And I would always be like, well, you're not going to, but I'm going to tell you what to do. And the times that people have done it, it worked. And the times where people didn't, they ended up getting screwed. And my specific advice was, tell your employer, I don't know what the hell this is. Why are you taking crap that's from the internet seriously? I have work to do. Just do that. Everybody that did that was fine. All the people that say, yeah, that was me, but let me explain. I was in a bad place. It was a different idea. Please. They're fired. So just straight up, that's not me. I don't know what that is. And there you go. You're scot-free. So everyone, whoever did that, it worked. But yeah. So anyway.
Thank you so much. Musket Basket gave $15. Thank you very much. Sorry for the belated super chat. Congratulations on the birth of your son. Well, thank you so much. My son is very small and screamy at the moment.
Well, actually, I didn't even know.
I've got a little boy now as well.
When exactly was just very, very recently?
When exactly? God, I should know his birthday, shouldn't I? This is embarrassing.
Well, I mean, within the last very recent time period.
It was a few weeks ago.
Okay, all right. Well, congratulations. Remember. I actually didn't know that. You never told me that. And no. But congratulations.
I do actually know my son's birthday. I was just joking. I do actually know his birthday. It was the 4th of March. That's when he was born. We'd been sort of obviously expecting him for a while, but we never made a big deal of it beforehand on social media. Then when he came along, it was a bit of a shock when I sort of announced it with the pictures. But yeah, we finally made it 2. And we've got obviously a little girl, little boy. We feel sort of like a little bit of a complete family now, quite happy with that. And he was great for about probably 4 weeks, actually. But post the 4 week period, he's decided it's good fun to sort of wake up at 3 a.m. and scream the house down for no reason. So this is a new development that developed over the last couple of days. And we don't know why this has happened, because up until now, he was sleeping pretty well. He was pretty calm, but he's just gone through sort of a little bit of a mental phase. It's like he's been at my Red Bull supply and it's pushed him over the edge. Obviously he hasn't, but he's 100% breastfed before anyone asks in the chat. I always love that with nationalism. Like, you, unless you state that you're doing explicitly that everything's being done the right way, you know you're going to get at least one angry comment saying, why aren't you breastfeeding?
I do my best to tell people not to try and run those kinds of parts of other people's lives, because, you know, even if somebody isn't, like, maybe they have their reasons, and frankly that's up to them. So, like, let's be honest. But, you know, people get real passionate about this stuff, so. But yeah,
he's 100% breastfed, and by the way, the wife does not drink Red Bull. So before anyone says he's breastfed, but your wife drinks 10 cans, she can't stand Red Bull or energy drinks, and she really, you know, she drinks decaffeinated tea, so that he doesn't get any caffeine, but it still happens. Yeah. I have to say all these things because, and there are pages out there that will like spend, there are freaks that spend,
I know,
hate me, but spend hours watching the stream to sort of pick something out, you know, which might be like, oh, did he, are they not breastfeeding? Wow, we've got it, we've got him, guys, we've got him.
Which, even if so, I would actually say it's just none of your business. Like, it's that's honestly just no one's business but you and your family. Like, I wouldn't even bother to try and justify myself. Like, you know, but that's me. But yeah, obviously, haters, man, their ears, they're glued to the speaker, aren't they? Yeah. They're just glued to that speaker. You can't take it off, can you?
They can't. And they're looking for the slightest thing. But usually, the best ones is when they clip out something from the gaming stream of me being intemperate. Because in all of the walks of life, I am sort of a very well-mannered, very polite, very calm, you know, consider my words carefully. However, if somebody does something wrong in a computer game, that's it. Temper lost. So if you want to clip something, that's where to do it.
Luckily for me, that's not a problem, because I'm just known to rant. So it's, you know, go for it. Yeah. Which is cathartic and extremely fun. But yeah.
Do you know what? I fancy doing, you know, at some point in my career, sort of a late night stream called, you know, Mask Off, Call It, where I really let it flow.
I worry that you would go to jail, though. This is the problem. Like, you know, like, this is the thing. It's like the in America, there is a material difference in how you're allowed to speak in America versus Britain. Like, there is objectively a material difference in that. And I can rant and say whatever I want. And part of that is I get banned from everything. Like, I am the most banned man on Twitter. Like, it's eternally just a constant thing that keeps happening. And there's all these people that are like, I have a Twitter account now. It's 2,500 subscribers. It's a couple months old. I had one last year built up to about 7,000 subscribers, and it was banned the day before the election because I posted Trump's act. And I'm convinced of this. His actual immigration record. They never gave me a reason why it was banned. It was just gone. And I'm like, I've been saying things this whole time. I don't change the style of how I say things. I always say it the same way. And there's people, oh, this guy, he's just... a small follower account. Like, you don't know who I am. You don't know the long history I have with this dumb website. And but you know, on my own side, that's what sort of why we built TRS, because we had this idea. We do not want to be dependent on any of this stuff. As it turns out, like, oh well, joke's on you, people just don't go to independent websites anymore. Ha ha ha. And it's true. And that's, you know, thankfully the audience knows to just go directly to the site. And but you know, yeah, the ability to try and promote through these things that were initially built with the promise you could promote your own independent projects via these sites. Nope. No more. Not anymore. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think those independent... And I think I will say this. There are sites as well, like Substack and others, that everyone's raving about and making money through, etc. And I do kind of wonder with sites like Substack, you know, how long it will be before they go too. Because
I don't wonder if though, because this is another thing where it's like, again, the replacement for your own website is now this centrally controlled, corporatized thing. You become dependent on them. They make a promise. But they will break it. They will break it.
They will. Yeah.
They will. I mean, I've got articles up on Substack, but one article in particular. I don't write too many articles. I should maybe start again. But particularly, I have a one. It's about the Israeli involvement in the European refugee crisis, with all kinds of citations and facts and figures and evidence for what I am saying, to prove that your Zionists are not your friends when it comes to anti-immigration. And if you think they are, man, are you pissing up the wrong tree. But yeah.
Open Borders for Israel gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, did you both see Tim Pool met Bibi Netanyahu?
I did.
I haven't seen this. It's just anti-Semitism.
What happened is that Benjamin Netanyahu was in America to plead with Jewish Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick for Israel to not be tariffed by the Trump administration, or rather to probably instruct them that they would not be doing this. And while during this visit, he took the opportunity to have a little powwow with influencers. And the idea was, this was actually... Tim Pool is dumb, okay? Like, he's really stupid. And the idea was, this is literally like a reward for good Israel shills. Many of these people at this meeting were Jewish. Like, Dave Rubin was there, and a couple of people named Mandel were there. The editor of Commentary Magazine, which is a Jewish magazine, was there. This is a reward. You, as a good Israel shill, you get invited to this. You get to meet the prime minister. You get to meet Bibi. You get to meet this important man. And the pretense of it was some kind of strategy session over messaging. And Tim Pool's like, you know, they kept talking about Iran. They kept saying that, you know, Iran isn't really going for Israel, that they're going for America. And I was like, Tim, they were telling you what you're supposed to say on your show. You were being given, honestly, directly from the prime minister's mouth, you were being told what the propaganda you're supposed to show. So the people that we know that were at this meeting, expect them to come out with that exact narrative today. So it's so funny. It's like, did you not realize what you were invited to? And according to the Jewish insider, Tim Pool was specifically invited to that meeting because Kanye West stormed out of an interview with him because he scolded Kanye for making anti-Semitic comments. So he got up and stormed out. And supposedly, Benjamin Netanyahu himself told Tim Pool, that's why you were invited to this little meeting that we're having. But it's like, Tim, you were not invited to a meeting where you're having some open conversation. You're invited to a meeting where you were supposed to kiss the prime minister's ass, and you were supposed to get your marching orders on the kind of propaganda you're supposed to deliver to the public. And the other people that were there aren't talking about being there because they're going to deliver the talking points. And they don't want you to know. They're just controlled. That they're just being told to give this literally by the representatives of the Israeli government are just telling these influencers, these propagandists, what to say. That's why they kept talking about Iran. Like, it's like, do you know what? It's so funny. I'm almost glad he's so dumb because he spilled the beans on this whole meeting. It's so funny. I was cracked up. Also, shout out to Information Liberation. Chris Manahan does great work on Twitter, and he's the guy he didn't break the story because Tim talked about it on his podcast. But that's where I got the information from. I just love that guy's reporting. So, yeah.
That doesn't shock me, by the way. I've never really liked that Tim Pool. He's such a dork. He's
such a milquetoast nerd, man. Yeah.
He's just awful. Friendly,
he's,
just,
he's not. He's legitimately dumb. Like, he's honestly, he's not a smart person. But yeah.
Yeah, he was. He's not my cup of tea. A friendly Fash gave $5. Thank you so much. Thank you both for your unwavering efforts and courage to name the Israelis. I love Mike's recent effort to detractors pointing out that their own strategies are no more successful than his, but he gets to stand tall knowing he isn't a sellout. Well, I agree with that. And Friendly Fash gave another $3. Thank you so much. And he said, make sure to listen to Mike's chapter by chapter review of the K-Mac trilogy on TRS. Apart from it and MK, what are your five top JQ books that any aspiring Judeologist should read?
Oh, man. MK, what is MK?
Mein Kampf.
Oh, okay.
I was like, I've ruined the stream. God.
Oh, I was like, I wasn't even thinking that. Yeah, sure, I've read that. That's actually, what's funny is, I don't think, do you get in trouble for telling people to read that? It's not, was that book illegal in Britain?
No, it's just, I once sort of made a flippant comment. People asked which three books I'd save if, like, all the books in the world were going to burn. And I said Mein Kampf at the time.
I would say it, sure.
It was, it caused incredible outrage. And I still get questioned about it if I ever do, like, an interview with the mainstream.
Well, so what? Like, you say whatever books you want. But, like, the thing is, there's actually a misconception about the book, which is that it's some big rant about Jews. It's really not.
No, it's not.
There's some material in there about it, but there's not that much.
It barely mentions it, to be honest.
It's like, just a few sections are very famous and quoted, but most of it is about, you know, his experiences, political formation of his ideas, and then trying to form a political party. Like, a lot of it is a little bit, not, I wouldn't say boring, but I like the first half a lot better. I'll put it that way.
Look, I'll say this. I was wrong. Mein Kampf is not one of my three favorite books. My three favorite books are Where's Mrs. Bear, which Sophia particularly likes, Noddy Rides Again, which also Sophia particularly likes, and Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is, because I was always really bad at doing book reviews, every book review I did for sort of the first 5 years of school was Fantastic Mr. Fox. They gradually improved over time, but they were based around the same book. So quote that, BBC, quote.
Yeah. If
three books, I'm going to say this. David Duke has written three books, all of which are extremely good. The Secret Behind Communism is excellent. And there is an audio book of that floating around on Odyssey. My Awakening is excellent. And he's done an audio book of that himself. He hasn't done an audio book of Jewish Supremacism, but that is also very good. And if you were to say to me which five books to read, I would say, yeah, it's an excellent book. And it's a beautiful book. And it's
signed by David himself. That's what I was showing off. Himself, the manuscript, the inscription to me personally that when he gave me this years ago. Yeah.
And they're very good books. Really, outside of The Culture of Critique and David's three books, they're sort of like the big ones in my opinion. Yeah. I don't, and if I'm saying that, and I've forgotten something that's important, then I apologize. But they are the books that I'd recommend.
I would argue I have some stuff. Stuff by Thomas Dalton is very good. He's got a number of them. I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. I'm seeing something called Eternal Strangers. It's more of a pamphlet. That's good. There's another one. This is more sort of, it's about Stryker and the Jews. It's about Julius Stryker and about Stryker Rosenberg and the Jews. About Julius Stryker, Alfred Rosenberg, and the Jews. Alfred Rosenberg, not Jewish, but as people know, the myth of the 20th century is something people should actually read. I don't know. Esau's Tears is a great book. McDonald cites it a lot. It's actually by a Mischling, Albert Lindemann, who himself is in a little bit of a polemic with the sort of mainstream Jewish apologetic community. And his argument is that the Jews have not been a purely victimized people throughout history. In fact, we have, as he says, we have oftentimes been aggressors ourselves, and we oftentimes have kind of deserved what we got, almost, is what he's saying. But he doesn't really phrase it that way, but that's an implication that is easy to draw. Man, I'm just looking at my bookshelf. I've got so many things. Interestingly enough, there's a collection of essays that is from the Occidental Quarterly, Kevin McDonald's website, by an author, interestingly, called Brendan Sanderson. Not Brandon Sanderson, the fantasy author. It's called Battle Lines. Great collection of essays. There's another book I have is by some Greek from New York City, Greek immigrant, Greek from back when everybody in New York City was an immigrant in the 1800s, called The American Jew, a catalog of his career. That's actually pure comedy. Like, this is one of the most hilarious, just over the top abusive anti-Jewish polemics. It's very funny. He talks about them being just utter scum that eat rotten meat and like stink up any room they go into. It's over the top, but it's hilarious. This is very funny. I don't know. I just got so many things, so much stuff here. I can't really trim it down to one. So yeah, I was just glancing over at my bookshelf here. Also, try read things like Germany Must Perish, right? Or Maurice Samuels. Read something about he's a Jew. Read You Gentiles. Read that. Look at how they view you. So yeah, these are all important things. Oh,
well, I'll say this: I don't do much reading, but at the moment,
Douglas Reed, The Controversy of Zion. See, I've got a ton, right? Douglas Reed, The Controversy of Zion. There's a little bit of, I would say, sort of conspiratorial stuff that I don't totally agree with, but it's good. It's a good analysis of Jews. There's some factual errors here, but whatever, it's irrelevant. Like, well, yeah, it's a good book. So I don't know, I could go on, I guess, but yeah, anyways,
all I was gonna say is, slightly off topic, reading books, if you haven't read this, you should read it. It's called Berserk. It's a Japanese manga. Yeah. Berserk is like the best thing ever. I think I'm a sort of like 350 something chapters into it. It's after 350 chapters, I am not in the slightest bit disappointed. It's probably,
how many chapters is it? This is really long.
It's still ongoing. The original creator died, and it's being finished by his best friend. It's fantastic. The art's brilliant. The story's brilliant. Yeah. It's all based on European mythology. It's absolutely fantastic. Anyway, we'll go to the next super chat. Friendly Fash gave another $10. Thank you so much. And he gave a two-part question. Grim question. But do you think Jews will be successful in normalizing child sexual abuse? Up until the 1980s, they'd almost been successful, then scaled it back. Now with AI-generated abuse material being argued as protected by the First Amendment and the normalizing of children choosing their sexuality, along with the continued debasement of society, the only hope I see without it being illegal, is that without it being illegal, they'll no longer have leverage over goy elites. I also think the pushing of incest porn by Jews is done, though. The average age of exposure to porn by children is 11. They want to sexually confuse children as well as groom twisted coomers into targeting single mums on Tinder.
Yeah, I think they've normalized it, man. I think it's been accomplished. I think it's mission accomplished. And the fact is, I'm going to have to, I know Friendly Fast, we're old friends. We've met several times, chat occasionally, haven't talked in a little while, but, you know, good to hear from you. I'm going to counter a little bit of what you said. Obviously the blackmail operation is real. The Jeffrey Epstein thing is real. And very much of that was, you know, giving underage girls, whether through who knows how young, up to like 16 or something like that, allowing sexual access to them for elites who then, but also many of the people that this was done for were Jews themselves. Like Alan Dershowitz, the famous attorney, was caught up in this. And so that's definitely true, but I don't know that, I mean, I know there was this thing with Candace Owens and Ian Carroll were accusing RFK of being compromised in this way or some kind, because he's out there with Rabbi Shmuley waving this huge Israeli flag and all this stuff. And also RFK has a long history of being an Israel shill, which is particularly in his case disgusting given that they literally murdered his father and uncle, but you know, there you go. I think a lot of elite support, Gentile elite support for Jews in Israel and America is enculturated into them. Like it's just their culture. Like this is the culture you're raised in as a wealthy elite in America and in Britain. There's a history of this. In fact, that's something Douglas Reed talks about, is the ideology of British Israelism and the influential hold that Jews had over the British government, Lloyd George and Lord Balfour and people like that, you know, back in the day when Balfour Declaration was delivered, and the sort of the ideological hold that they had over these people, part of it through the, sort of the original form of Christian Zionism, which was British Israelism. It is, some are blackmailed. There's no question. Some are compromised and blackmailed. I don't think all of them are. I think some of them are just on the same page. Like they just think this too. They're just willing participants. I think Donald Trump is a willing participant. And honestly, even if Donald Trump did take sexual favors on the Epstein jet, which he was a frequent flyer on, I don't know that he had to be forced. I think that he's just with these people. I mean, his Middle East envoy is this guy, Stephen Witkoff, who's a billionaire Jewish real estate developer in New York City, who's apparently his longtime friend of 40 years. So like this, that's just his buddy. Like they're in the same business. They're in the same city. They're friends with each other. And so this is his buddy. And he's like, you be the Middle East envoy. And this Jew goes over there and he's, you know, getting it brain balls and enforcing all these Arab countries to submit and all this stuff. And so, you know, I think that these are just who these people are. You know, I don't discount, but I think that it's sort of like, I think there's a perception among some, those of us powerless people who are sort of observers of this, that the reason they're not doing what we want or what they promise us they're going to do is because they must be blackmailed, they must be compromised. And people like Lindsey Graham, like, let's be honest, the Mossad folder on him is probably as thick as berserk. But you know, I think some of these people just like this. They disagree. They're like, no, I love Israel and I want to support them. Now this is going to be clipped out of context for sure. But you know what I mean? Like this is just how they feel. They don't need to really be coerced and they don't mind lying to you. What do you matter? What are you going to do? Complain? You're going to vote the same in the next election. So, yeah.
Well, look, I'm going to read you a headline here from December 2022, and this was from the Daily Mail. And I'm going to quote this directly. It says, letting paedophiles live out their perverted sexual fantasies using child sex robots might stop them harming kids, researchers controversially.
You know what else would stop them harming kids?
A bullet to the head.
Hanging them. Oh, I wasn't sure I was allowed to say this on this show, right? Because I don't want to run afoul of any safety laws, right? Yeah, killing them. Killing them would stop them from harming children.
I think the issue here with here is they're obviously trying to normalize this,
yes,
by moving into an area where if this is computer generated, if it's a doll, if it's this, if it's that, if it's AI produced, no one's actually being harmed. But once that stuff becomes freely available and downloadable and legalized, it then opens the door a little more to that just being another normalized fetish. And that's the danger. And I read a report
already happened because the same argument was made about cartoons and drawings. And actually, I've heard that argument for a long time. I don't remember when I first heard it, but it feels like decades at least that I first heard this, that sure, this is not real. It's a drawing. Someone drew it. It's fake, but it's not an actual child. So it's okay. But now you can find that stuff is online. Cartoons of this have been online forever. And now AI stuff, it's just a shortcut to the same thing. And it is normalized. I think, see, it is. I think it just has been to a large extent. Sure, a lot of people are still disgusted by it and think it's wretched. And there are legal laws against it and sometimes even penalties, although incredibly light. I mean, that's the one thing in America, like when people do get punished for this, the punishment is always like a slap on the wrist, which is such incompatible with the public perception, which is generally still one of disgust and opposition. Like you have to reason your way into this other position through like degenerate, you know, argumentation and things like this. But I think this has been largely normalized, unfortunately. I mean, I know it's a depressing thought, but not to stomp on what you were saying, but yeah.
No, I think there was something else I read on, I can't remember where I read it. There was somebody wrote an article about the amount of uploads to porn sites where it was something to do, not direct incest, but something based around that taboo. So step, you know.
Yeah, that's all of it. Yeah.
Long term, stepmom does this, stepdad does this to his stepdaughter. You know, and it was all about, you know, dad's girlfriend came on to me, this kind of stuff. And it was all these sort of taboos that blurred the lines between sort of obviously sexual partners within the familial group, albeit not by blood, which would be direct incest, but the closest thing to that. So it was kind of like, you know, young lad, his dad's remarried, dad's out, young lad sat by the pool, stepmom comes over, seduces him, and you go on any of these sites, and apparently, according to this article, the number of films uploaded with that as a central theme has just exploded. And that's obviously to cause strife and trouble within family groups, because if people act that out, it would rip the family to pieces. Yeah. You know, and you sleep with dad's girlfriend.
The excuse for this is always there's like demand for it. No, there's not. Arguably, there's demand, generally speaking, for something like pornography, nude pictures of women. There's people that are going to want to look at that, sure. But one, that doesn't mean they should get it, right? First of all, it doesn't mean that they should get it, because pornography, as I've said, is a specifically a sexual abuse of men. It's a specific exploitation of the male sex drive. That it's a hack. It should not be allowed. It is abusive to men that consume it. It is abusive towards the male sex drive, the male sexual impulse. It takes advantage of that, takes advantage of your psychological, your evolutionary adaptation to seek out sex and to give you a stand-in for it that you some cases is equally or even more satisfying. And it's should not be allowed. It just should be blanket illegal. But then on top of it, they keep introducing further and further taboos and things like this. And then before you know it, people are trannies. I don't know how to use that word, but you know what I mean? People are, maybe I'll chop my penis off. It could be interesting to do that, you know? So, you know, it's like, why are we allowing this? We know who's behind it. We know who's behind it.
The next super chat is from Poit, and he gave $25. Thank you so much, my friend. It's very much appreciated. Aunt Sally gave $5. She says, thank you, Mark and Mike. Well, thank you very much, Aunt Sally. It's great to see you here tonight. Jumping Jack Flash gave $5 and said, happy Wednesday. Thank you so much. Europe is Ours gave $5. Thank you so much. She said, there were some liberals in work today bemoaning illegals in hotels. Everyone in this country is sick to the back teeth of them being here, and they are not afraid to say it despite increasing censorship. Yeah. I pick this up that more and more people that I speak to are annoyed about the migrant invasion. But that seems to have always been the case. There's been several periods in British history. Sort of the late 70s was a great example. The Blair regime was a great example where people were so sick of foreign labour. The Labour Party adopted the phrase British jobs for British workers as their like slogan. And these things, they come back up again, but just brace yourself for disappointment when people vote for establishment candidates on May the 1st in the county council election.
They always will. I would say, put this specific issue to a straight up and down vote. It would be like 80% of people in Britain would vote against it. If they could do straight up and down secret ballot on whether or not to accept more foreigners, with the obvious implication these are non-white foreigners. This would be 80% of people would vote against it. 80 guaranteed, and so many of Labour voters and liberals would vote against it too. Nobody wants more of these people. Yeah,
I can tell you this now. Sometime back in the 2000s, when I was in the BNP, a paper did this poll. they went to the people and they gave them sort of 10 policies. And they said, would you vote for a party which had this 10 policies? What do you think of them? And around 80% of people said, yeah, we agree with every one of them. They're great policies. We'd vote for them. And then they sort of pulled the sticker off the bottom and they're like, this is actually the BNP's policies. And the paper was sort of like shock, horror. People agree with the BNP. Yet in major national elections across the country, the best the BNP ever did was around 6.2%. So despite apparently...
Which is still remarkably good. Like, you know, that's still, I mean, from my perspective, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a great vote for a nationalist party. But in terms of actually coming to power, that was the high point, the best it ever got. Yeah. And since then, it's declined dramatically. Now, obviously, people vote for reform, but reform are not a proper nationalist party. They're great at breaking up the old political dichotomy, but they're not a proper nationalist.
I fear they're just going to become the new Tories, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, that could be what happened.
I mean, I don't want to be doom and gloom, but, you know, I hate to say that. That's what I see happening. But, you know, let's see what happens. It's a thing because there's all kinds of mechanisms to get people to retreat back to these, and one of them is the other party will win, or the bad guys, or these are actually Nazis, or, you know, whatever it might be. And so the media control is what ultimately determines how people are going to vote. Like, it's the media that does it, and the media that people listen to and choose to listen to. And people get really invested also in America. I don't know, I'm assuming it happens in Britain too, because it's very similar media environments. Real invested on a tribal level with the party, with the Democrat versus Republican thing. And very often it seems the only satisfaction that people really want out of an election is just the pleasure of the other guy being mad at the result. Because they don't, you can't, and increasingly there's weirdly an amount of dissident literature of just people blog posts and articles that people write, or tweet storms, discussing this exact thing. Like, that's what it is. And for many Trump people, I get a lot of shit from them because they're like, stop, I wanted to just feel good and enjoy this, and you're not letting me do that. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry, I'm happy to always be the rat of the garden party, my friend, but no, this is, there's nothing you're gonna get out of this government.
The rat of the garden.
You never heard that before? Look, I know it's why people get angry, because I'm telling you that the thing you would, it's just, don't fantasize. It's a tough message. It's not doing me any favors. Like, I get a lot of hate for that. And I don't want to lie to people, man. And I got to say what I got to say. And this is what I think. And, you know, it's funny. There was a similar thing in America, although it wasn't like a specific project by a dissident group, but it was just more sort of like the media gauging policies and such. And they were sort of like independent of partisanship. They were like some range of policies. And I remember the thing that stood out to me is that there was something that these were things that were considered to be at the time like kind of off limits or just not actually addressed by either side. And there was things that were coded right and coded left as the most popular policies. And the two most popular were, this is very funny, but a bit depressing. On the right, it was the deportation of all illegal immigrants was overwhelmingly the thing that people chose. On the left, you know what it was? Legalizing weed. And and it's like, there's probably the funny thing is there's probably a big crossover of people that check both. In fact, I know there was a big crossover of people that ticked both of those. But it's sort of like, I would make that trade off, maybe, but I don't know, but probably yes, but maybe short term. But it's just, you know, but in the end they did get the legalization of weed. Like, we did get that. I don't actually know. I know America is a patchwork of policies, but I find it hard to believe there's anywhere in America where you get in any trouble for smoking weed anymore at all, or having it on you, or any, I just don't think you do. It's effectively legal. But yeah, so it's deporting all illegals. And, you know, it's so funny. One of the things I get from people who want to kind of sort of rear guard defend Trump and what his administration is doing is saying, at least he's normalizing the idea of deporting immigrants and stuff like that. Even if he's not actually doing it, or he's only doing it in specific cases where they attack Israel. But I'm like, dude, have you not been paying attention? Like, because I'm telling you, man, the conservatives have always talked about deporting all the illegal immigrants. Maybe I think a lot of the one of the reasons there's maybe a little bit of misunderstanding on this point is some people may have come of age in the Bush years. And Bush was actually an outlier for a Republican in that he didn't really talk about that. Right. That was a new kind of thing. And that was sort of where they at the time they were wanting to move the Republican Party to this thing. But it didn't work. So they've sort of people didn't go for it. But man, in the 90s, in the 80s, this was just a constant thing. And every Republican, there used to be a thing. Every Republican's a white nationalist a week before the election. Right. They all are. And but then the day afterwards, they're a conservative. They're, you know, and so. It's just I don't know what to do about it. I mean, people ask me what to do, and I'm like, man, I wish I knew. But it, as you said, just yeah, get prepared. That yes, the, in the end, people that say they want these things will just vote for. And I don't even really blame them. I don't even really blame them. It's the media environment, you know. It's so that's what we're up against.
Well, that is indeed. Is indeed. Aris Rosenberg gave $10. Thank you so much. Said, all right, Mike bullied me into slacking off and creating an entropy right now at work. Now watch Upstream Color with Mark and do a review already. People are desperate for you to review Upstream Color. Is it like your favorite film or something?
No, but I do like Primer, which is by the same director, Shane Carruth. I have not seen Upstream Color. I do like Primer, although, man, you got to watch Primer like 5 times before you understand what the hell happened. That's a movie about guys, these two guys. It sounds silly, but it's really good. They invent a time machine, but there's very specific rules to how it works. And the way they do, they go through it, but then you kind of, there's a period of time where there's two of you walking around because you go through and you can only go back a certain time. And then you have to hide in a hotel room while your double goes out and invests in stocks or whatever is that their scheme was, right, to make a lot of money. And it goes south very quickly. And then you can imagine there's doubles of these guys around and they're, someone breaks into his house and it's him. And it's a great movie, man. But sometimes you're like, what the hell is going on? And you have to watch like an online breakdown where someone tells you, here's exactly, this is clone A, this is clone B, and he's doing this. But it's a good movie. And Shane Carruth was in it and directed it. And I think he also did Upstream Colors. That's probably why.
Yeah, he did. We'll have to sort it out for the...
I would be willing to watch Upstream Colors. Hers is real weird. But Primer is also real weird. So, you know.
I like weird films. Mm.
So you should check out Primer, but I am telling you, man, the first time through, you will legit halfway. You'll think you know, but once it gets about halfway, I don't know what's going on, and you'll have to like follow a flow chart to understand what is going on. But it's a good movie anyway. It's funny how even though it does confuse you, I'm still like it's really good because generally I don't like things that are confusing, but it's a good movie.
Well, we shall definitely have to hook up for a film club. Dead Truska gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, keep on fighting. Well, thank you so much, my friend. Scotty Nat gave $10. And he says, my news feed has been full of adolescents. Should be used in schools as a teaching tool for weeks. Now a real knife crime has happened and it's the usual suspect and usual victim. The narrative has shifted to he's a good boy and the white boy should have kept his hands to himself. We can't live with these people. Prepared for a full societal meltdown if Anthony is convicted of murder or manslaughter. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah,
young white guy. They've raised him apparently about $250,000 on some crowdfunding.
This is remarkable. So, and that's I think one of the reasons why this story is going, because there's a lot of white black on white murders. As I said, it happens daily, and we have this Austin Metcalf story. So this is a particularly awful story. These guys, the twin brothers, right? Football players, and I guess they were at a track meet or something. And this kid's black kid from another school, and Austin Metcalf tells this kid, you know, you got to move. You're not in the right tent. This isn't your school or something like that. And he stabs him in the chest and kills him right in front of his twin brother who tried to save him, and his mother and his father came. And it sort of gained attention because his father said some things about being a Christian and forgiving everybody and forgiveness and such. You know, I got to be honest, Mark. I just don't have it in me anymore to attack this guy. I just don't have the heart anymore for that. Like, it's just tragic. I just feel bad for the man. I don't know what to say. You know, like, I just don't have that vicious streak, I guess. Maybe I'm getting old. Not that I don't still have a vicious streak, but not for this. And I did stand up for him somewhat because I want to make something clear. A lot of the stuff that he said, people understood it as a rebuke of them, of like people talking about the racial aspect of the crime from the perspective of white people. He wasn't really talking about you. He was talking about the stuff that blacks are saying, because blacks immediately started inventing stories. Austin smashed his phone. Austin said the N-word. Austin said this and that. So he was saying basically, if you weren't there and you don't know what happened, stop lying and don't make this a racial thing. In other words, don't call my dead son a racist, because he knows, whatever his personal views are, and I think he's like a Christian conservative or something like that, he knows that means in the media narrative his son is the bad guy. And it could mean that the killer gets off. So, you know, I'm not apologizing for the cucky things he said. I can't have this, like, just, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. And I should imagine that in some ways, like, you want the dad to come out and say it as it is, but in some ways he probably wants to get the trial of his son's murderer out the way before he gives his actual opinion. Because you know what juries are like. If you get a multiracial jury and the dad says, look, you know, the black guy needs to hang, the jury are going to maybe take a dim view of that and let him off. I mean, I think, you know, in some cases you have to maintain a bit more of a dignified silence.
Even if he thinks some of the stuff he says, like, I'm also just like, well, a lot of people, this country is millions of dumb people. Why am I abusing the one dumb guy whose kid was murdered? You know what I mean? It's just like, it's like, this place is filled with idiots. Like, what do you want? So what do you want me to say, man? Like, but I was defending him in the stuff where he was talking about, don't talk about rumors. Don't spread false stories about what happened. We know what happened. My other son was there, etc. And then you got these conspiracy theorists who are like, they're saying it didn't happen at all. And it's like, shut up. You people are just, you're awful people. And everyone's like, what? Oh, sure, he's got a twin brother. Yeah, he does. That happens. So, I don't know, man. It's just, but the thing is that blacks are absolutely concocting these false stories. And they all have different ones. And you know what's funny? They tell on themselves with some of the things they're saying. So you see some blacks saying things like, well, you know, man, maybe you don't just go and mess with somebody. You don't know what kind of day he has. Like, yeah, see, that's the kind of stuff that you people act on. Like, that's your values. Well, this is why this is an exact example of why we can't be around you. Why people don't operate like that. We don't assume, oh, man, this guy might have a tough day. Maybe he's going to murder me. You know, or that that's an excuse. If you do kill somebody, you had a tough day. Black people legitimately think, this guy was having a rough day. All right, just take it a little easy. He stabbed someone to death. Like, this is acceptable to them. This is one of the main things to understand. Like, black people complain a lot about the community, right? The violence in the community. But whenever the violence happens, you defend the criminal element. Like, you will. I've actually had, there have been very rare cases of what I would actually say was a relatively innocent black man was killed by the cops. It's a couple times a unicorn has appeared, right? The black community doesn't care. They care when it's the criminal element, when it's the gangster, when it's the violent person, when it's the known guy, because he's the one in their community that's known. And so they go out for that one, right? They always will defend the criminal element. And when you listen to them and they talk about this stuff, they just think crime should be legal. They think it should be legal to steal. They think it should be legal to shoot people, to fight. They think that because both parties agreed that it's okay for one person to kill another. They have all of these ideas. And then they come and they're like, but our community, the violence in the community. It's like, it's your own fault. It's your own values. You people think crime should just be allowed to do illegal things. And you know what? I'm happy for you to do that. I don't want to have to be subject to that. That's oppressive to us. And so I don't want to have to live around you. You can do that all you want. And arguably you do in Africa. That's how you behave. And that's fine. I'm not trying to impose white values. This is this idea that we're trying to impose. I don't want to impose white values on you. Be yourselves. but don't impose your values on us. And so, yeah, they've raised all this money for this guy. And it's just like, and there's even probably some degenerate whites that are involved in this too. And it's just disgusting. And I hope this fucking, I don't want to say the word, but I hope he hangs. And he deserves to.
DSilent7 gave $100. Thank you so much. He said, the Chinese animated film Nizar 2 is the top grossing animated feature of all time, ahead of anything produced by Disney Pixar. China is making films with stories based on traditional values and Chinese culture history, while Hollywood is producing brown, gay, trans, goy slot. The tide of soft power is turning globally. Well, this is amazing. What you were talking actually Googles this. So there's this film. And thank you so much for such a generous super chat, DSilent7. And thank you to everyone who actually did transfer over to Entropy tonight and make donations, because it really is good of you to do that. So DSilent7 gave $100, and he's talking about this film. It's spelled NE/ZHA2. And I just Googled this. So China have started to make their own films. And this Chinese sort of animated film, which is a traditional Chinese cultural story, has grossed over $2 billion. It's the best, highest grossing film of 2025, the highest grossing non-English film, the highest grossing animated film, and the fifth highest grossing film of all time. And this is very interesting. And this is kind of touches on what we were saying earlier. Trump sort of saying, oh, you know, we're going to give you all of these tariffs and you're going to be ruined. And they're like, well, we just won't let your films come over here. We'll make our own films. We'll do our own thing. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's interesting, because at one point, the idea that a film produced outside of America would be one of the greatest grossing films of all
time. Unthinkable, yeah.
Yeah. But now it's actually happening. And it's kind of like Trump is trying to, in some ways, leverage something that doesn't exist anymore. You know, saying to a country maybe in the 1970s or 80s, well, you're not going to get your Hollywood movies. Well, that might have been the end of it, but it's 2025.
Right. Yeah. I just looked up this movie. It looks a little bit silly to me, but whatever. That's fine. It's not about, it's not for me. So that's fine. Maybe it would be interesting to watch. I don't know. But yeah, it's got kind of that Pixar style animation. I was thinking more maybe like an anime style, but in any case, this is actually something Borzoi has talked about, because he's very interested in Asia.
I need to get him on a show as a guest.
Yeah, sure. That would be. I'll propose it to him. But we used to actually joke. We had an old meme going that he actually was Asian. His name was Ed Chang, because there was people that thought they doxed him and they were calling it. It was very funny, actually. That's all. That's ancient news. It's like going back 5-6 years. But yeah, he's always had, he lived in, you know, he's talked about, he did a student thing in South Korea briefly, but so he knows a lot about it. And he said, yeah, you know, the Chinese are constantly making movies, made for TV movies, lower grossing movies. And the stories are about, you know, even like minor figures in their history. Like, if Britain used to actually do this, right? Britain used to do this. BBC used to do this. Actually, the character, they would do period dramas and stories out of British history. You know, this, even Americans of very, very high status and intellectual Americans would consume this content, and you know, things like that. Like, I remember, it's not really totally British, but there's I Claudius is like one of my favorite things ever. So good, such a fantastic series, and other series like that. You know, that the BBC used to do, and just don't do it anymore. It's just brown people crap all the time, right? And so the Chinese, you know, whatever else you say, and there's people that mock the old multipolarity, the China, they're weak, their economy is crashing. And well, look, it seems to be, to me, first of all, it's a massively huge and powerful state. Don't fool yourself. Like, stop being silly. This government is not going anywhere, right? But it seems to me they've got a sense of who they are. They're supporting their own culture, and they're doing it by nature. No one's telling them to do it. It's like, this is how they are because this is who they are. And they don't seem to have the subversive elements that we have, what make it very, just the very idea that we would make a film celebrating even like a minor figure from European history. Pick someone who you want, American, Davy Crockett or something like that. I don't know. You know, I don't know if you think about somebody, a folk legend from Britain or something like that, right? Or a real person, right? A real person too. I don't know who these people are. I don't know Chinese history well at all. I'm actually kind of totally blank on East Asian history. But good for them. Good for them. I support them. I think it's great.
Well, it's interesting because I think it was last year a computer game came out called Black Myth Wukong, which is stars this character who's like a basically like a monkey king, and it's based on a Chinese novel called Journey to the West, and it's a very old Chinese novel. And this game absolutely blew up. It was really well made. People were buying it. It made millions and millions and millions of dollars, grossed huge numbers. It was a top selling game on Steam when it came out. I think it's the most played single player on game on Steam for concurrent users. People couldn't get enough of this game. And again, it's the Chinese doing what the West used to do, but doing it based around their culture and heritage. And these things become huge hits. And it does say that it does show you that there is a desire out there for people's for stories involving people's traditional heritage, culture, etc. Not everything has to be Hollywood goy slop, and that's a good thing.
Well, anyway, years ago, people would tell me that I, because I used to be. Now, I actually wasn't as critical as some in my age cohort of, like, anime fandom. But guys that were into it, that were, like, younger than me, Zoomers or Millennials or something, they would defend it. And they'd be like, look, people watch it because it's not degenerate Jew stuff, right? And I would say there's a ton of very degenerate anime. So, you know, it really kind of does depend on what you're watching. There's good stuff and there's also some awful stuff, right? That is absolutely totally degenerate and weird and probably due to a lot of Western influence on Japan, or maybe just their brains broken by the atomic bomb. But, you know, which is of course then our fault as well, but yeah, so I understand that argument completely. And it kind of sucks that it's like, it's almost feeling it's like that you would have to sort of vicariously enjoy, wow, here's what somebody that's not a self-hating culture, this is the kind of stuff they can produce. You could enjoy it anyway. Like, even in a white system, you would be fine to enjoy these products, but, like, you should have your own as well, right? So, yeah.
Thank you. Jagdeep Jaino gave a series of super chats. We'll go through them. They totaled $28. Thank you so much. The first is, hey, Mike and Mark, I recently watched Devin Stack's cutting and insightful review of The Believer, a 2001 film starring Ryan Gosling. He plays a troubled young Jew who becomes a neo-Nazi, but despite being adored for his intelligence and eloquence, he is deeply conflicted. Has Mike ever seen the film? And can he draw any parallels between Ryan Gosling's character in his own life? Gosling's character resonated.
So yeah,
I haven't seen the film.
It's not an honest question. The person just wanted.
No, I know. I actually thought very it clever. Was a serious.
Well, this is the same. I guarantee you, it's the same guy. Listen, hey,
it's
asshole.
The same guy every time. He does these.
Let me tell you something. Why don't you just come on the stream? Seriously, next time I'm on, you come on. Let's talk.
To be fair, he does sort of amusing super chats, decent super chats to sort of everyone, and that's his kind of joke with you. And you react quite well. I think him or somebody else did a funny super chat to somebody who used to be the co-host of this show the other week, and they had a complete sort of, like, I'm not going to say meltdown, but it wasn't far off. They made a joke about what would you do if you were trapped on that Antarctic base with all the blacks and the women, and they were all kicking off. How would you deal with it? And that caused trouble. So there are people that go and sort of leave these sort of funny super chats, and I try to answer them in sort of good faith, even if they are based on me. And I've obviously been called a lot of things in my time. And I've got to say this.
It's just a thing that for some reason.
I ignore all insults unless you pay me. So if you're going to pay.
Well, I'm happy that you gave money to Mark. Please just continue doing it. But, like, you know what's funny? There's a certain type of criticism where, like, the only time you hear some of these people criticize a Jew is if they are falsely accusing me of it, of being that. And usually this stuff comes out of the woodwork when I do something on Twitter or someplace like that. That is a particular, actually trenchant critique of Israel or Trump or some Jewish thing or something like that. That's when suddenly I get this stuff coming and popping up in my thing. I'm like, oh, isn't that interesting? isn't that interesting. It was actually funny the other day. I saw somebody on. They're like, yeah, there's no matter what, if you're a personality in the nationalist space or something, inevitably sometime or another, someone's going to accuse you of being gay. I'm like, that's actually not something anybody's ever accused me of. But is this shit I get? But no, I can't draw any parallels, my friend.
No one's ever accused me of being gay either. That's
there you go. Good job.
Obviously, people have called me a Jew, but they've never accused me of being
gay. Oh, man, that's getting clipped. It's over, man.
By tomorrow morning, yep. There will be a whole new accusation of homosexuality.
No, that video is going to go around. And so it's like, when I answer these, I very specifically make clear to not phrase things like that. But I would say to this guy, look, if you're serious, you come on the show next time I'm on the stream. See if you have the balls to do it. I'll answer your questions live. Last time this happened, I made a guy cry.
God, I don't know what's happening. I try and if I did a show where I just was like, if you send me super chats, you can insult me. I wouldn't mind doing that because I can generally, part of the British psyche is sort of being able to take sort of banter and insults pretty well. But I was sort of that super chat. It was a multi-part one, and so I apologize.
I can tell you I question whether or not he can.
I'm quite thick skinned.
I would like to see if he can give as good as he gets, or if he can get as good as he gives. That's what I would like to see. That's my point. I can take whatever, as you can see. I wonder if he can.
Well, it was made up, gave $25. This is a proper question. He says, with Birmingham appearing to reach its final form recently, do you think we'll soon see similar scenes indicative of the collapse in other blighted towns and cities? Could this go any way to waking the English people up politically? Well, firstly, I'm not sure how many English people there are left in Birmingham. I mean, there's about
50%
white British. Secondly, Birmingham's situation with the rubbish everywhere and the garbage overflowing and no bin collections is down to the fact that Birmingham Council collapsed because they were just spending money like it was water and they bankrupted themselves. Now, I think this may well spread to other towns and cities in terms of like bankruptcies, etc., through mismanagement and spending, you know, millions and millions on diversity hires and things like that. And things like gay pride events when they're not putting money into essential services. So yeah, I think this could spread, but I'm not sure how it will radicalize English people in Birmingham, because I've said this before, there's three types of white people that live in heavily multicultural areas. The first type are generally people who enjoy living in multicultural areas. They are they're self-selecting. And they're people who fundamentally want to live there. They're people who they're either religious converts, they've got non-white spouses, they're liberals. They like that kind of
life. Or they're just trash.
Well, that was going to be the second type. And I said there were three, and Mike's kind of ruined the surprise.
Sorry.
The third type, which is actually the minority, are people who haven't got out of that area because they can't, because they're not.
I'm not considering that. I'm not calling those people trash. I'm saying it's not just
people there, but out of the. I would say this. Firstly, you're never winning Birmingham back. It's only 40% white British. And out of that 40% white British, even if half of them were good people that wanted to turn things around, that's only 20% of the population of Birmingham. You know, at that point, they're getting swamped by the 80% who want more of what they've currently got, which is more Islam, more immigration, more progressiveness, more diversity. These places are largely lost. Now, what Birmingham should be is an example to cities that are still largely homogenous that say, look, we don't want to become the next Birmingham. But the problem is white people don't tend to wake up to the problem of demographic change until it's either already happened or it's so far along that it's inevitable, at which point they flee. That's the problem we have in Britain. So people in Bradford, when I was campaigning there, had woken up to the problem, but by then Bradford was almost lost. So they all fled to the outer areas of Bradford, but the whole centre was gone. And that's the issue. you know, when people are ready to vote against a problem, the problem's already there. People don't preempt the problem. Like, you don't call out the boiler maintenance man until your boiler breaks. You know, you don't ring him up and say, hiya, Barry, can you come and fix the boiler? Why, what's wrong with it? Well, nothing, but we think there might be something wrong, or, you know, there's been a slight, you know, we're just a bit worried about the boiler. You know, the problem manifests, then you call Barry to fix it. Now, that was the problem with multiculturalism. But by the time the problem has manifested, there really isn't a fix, because it's already here, and then you can't vote it out because there's too many of them to allow you to do it. And this is so I'll give you one last example before I go over to Mike. In Yorkshire, you had places like Bradford where people were very aware of the problem because things had gone too far, and they were willing to vote, but there wasn't enough of them left for serious change. But then there was places like Harrogate, which is an all-white homogenous utopia, but everyone there literally votes Liberal Democrat and talks about immigrant rights and how we need to be more tolerant. But that's because there isn't a single immigrant living there. But when Harrogate's overtaken, they'll be ready to vote for a nationalist alternative. But
others beyond. Yeah. And that's also like, you know, it's like, as you said, there are the one myth I actually have tackled is the idea that like white liberals are always only forever separate from diversity and never live amongst it. That's not necessarily true. Like, there are some that actually do and enjoy living amongst it, and even ones that have a little bit of money. But when I said trash, I was more talking about like street type people, like the kinds of whites who will be like wiggers or you know what I mean? Oh, like, will join in with that kind of.
When I used to live in a very multicultural area, you would see people in there who
cabs and whatnot,
weed addict. People who were you know, seriously sort of like invested in degenerate lifestyles, and they gravitated to those areas.
Yeah, so there's that in America too. Like, you have the liberals, and generally speaking, like, the liberals are kind of, there's this deep hypocrisy because they're sort of, through their financial and social situation, sort of shielded from some of the results of this. And then you see poor whites involved in it, and they become just like these trashy participants in the degenerate culture. They become drug addicts, drug users, drug sellers. They have the baby mama problems. They start talking like blacks, you know. It's so you get this too, right? And the thing is, though, I think that the problem of whites not being forward looking on this or being myopic on this is relatively recent. I mean, I think even in America, you know, we had Jim Crow, we had rules. Just, you cannot mix black and white communities, which is forever. We're never supposed to. Jews are never want to let us forget how terrible this was. But every time something like Austin Metcalf happens, I'm like, well, this is why. And this is not abusive to blacks. This was not abusive to them. Like, and even if it was, like, so what? But it's also, it wasn't. It was, the integration is abusive to us. And, you know, people were very vigilant. There was a time when people were absolutely, whites in America just by nature were very vigilant about blacks and whether blacks were around or they were going to be in their neighborhoods. And, you know, white flight is a thing, but it's not just like, whites used to be proactive about this. They used to guard their communities, and the blacks forever complain about like sundown towns, things like this, where, you know, whites would basically be we don't want to see a black face here after sundown, which is a lot of that's kind of made up a little bit. But there were places where, you know, it was made pretty clear by the white pod that blacks were not welcome. And I don't think that this was abusive, because frankly, do you feel welcome when you go to one of their areas? I don't. You know, I don't. And the level and the likelihood of actual like physical violence being used against them is far less in a place where white people are just, hey, get out, than if a white person just wanders into one of their areas just clueless, right? So this is a recent phenomenon, and has to do with the media environment and the way people's attention spans. One, the narratives that they're given by Jews about how race is so great, multiculturalism, diversity is so great. And even people who experience it negatively, they have dissonance about this, or they're worried about talking about it, and all the taboos and the speech controls and everything. So it's not simply like people are just myopic. Like, this is an induced sort of social psychosis. It happens here too, and people are paralyzed. They don't want to talk about it, and they resent you wanting to, because they're like, look, I'm okay right now. Stop, don't get me involved in this mess, you know. So, but it's, yeah, but you know, it's coming, and they're like, maybe not. I mean, it might not be, you know? So it's like, you know, it's just, it's really, I don't know what to do. I'm doing the thing that I know how to do to try and break this dam of myopia and not caring and all these things, right? And sometimes you got to be honest with people. I can't lie to people. I think the number of whites waking up, and the thing is, in America, there is a good amount of waking up already happening. So I think when people talk about, will this wake people up? I say, I don't know, you're kind of seeing some waking up happening, certainly among younger people. What we have to worry about is that waking up isn't co-opted, because that's a big problem that I do see, that Jews will find ways to worm their way in and co-opt these waking ups that happen and turn them to their own ends. It just is a tough thing, man. I don't know. But no, I also would agree. I don't think that what happens in Birmingham, and I can think of countless examples in America. I mean, dude, American cities are just, it's incredibly rare. I can think of a couple cities over 100,000 that are like more than 80% white. One, I think Manchester, funny enough, Manchester, New Hampshire, which is arguably much nicer than Manchester, England. It's a really nice place, but named after it, obviously, but really nice city. But I think it's the only one I can think of. There might be a few others, and that one might have even degenerated in the year since I last checked the stats. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. Barry Stanton gave $5. I hope that's the real Barry Stanton.
Oh, Barry, yeah. How you doing,
Barry? I love Barry. I Honorable Judge Adam Goldstein, find you, Mark Collett, guilty of gross anti-Semitism and aggravated hate speech. Therefore, I hereby sentence you to toss David Lammy's salad. Oh, thank you so much, my friend. Thank you for the
speech. It's got vibes like Barry does. You know, seems like
he
the real guy.
He does. DSalon7 gave $25. Thank you so much. Said everything Trump does is something like something from the old short story, The Monkey's Paw. You technically get what you wished for, but with terrible consequences. Yeah, it's like the film Wishmaster. It's you make your wish, but it's sort of twisted in some way, and it backfires on you. Flayer Kate gave $14.88. Thank you so much, and he said, have either of you fellas talked to Jazz Hands lately? I really miss his content, and I hope he's doing well. Cheers. I really miss Jazz Hands. I used to like having him on the show. I haven't spoken to him. No. So good luck to you, Jazz.
I did briefly a while ago. He's not coming back, though. He's on to other things. So, yeah, he's done. He doesn't want to do he's not going to come back. So, yeah. But I understand your sentiments, but yeah.
That is just, you know, obviously.
I understand why he has his reasons. I don't really I'm not going to tell everybody what those are. It's not anybody's necessary business. He decided he wanted to stop doing the content and do something else. And I understand it. So, you know,
I think the thing is, and I'll say this about Jazz Hands. He's it's one of those things where if you've been doing it for a long time, you know, there can be like a lot of burnout for people. And it's hard to keep doing it for a long time. And I wish him all the best.
And when I say that, I know there's going to be rumors, because there's people that know that there was some conflict between himself and myself over certain positions and narratives. And we've actually had some knockdown and drag out fights over certain issues. That's not why I'm saying that. Legitimately, this is his business. And he made this choice, and he wants to do something different. And it's just what that's just what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like that. I'm not covering up. Oh, there was just, I excluded him or kicked him. That's not what happened. No, he's just this legitimately. He chose to move on and did not want to do it anymore. And it's his business what he is doing now. So yeah.
Well, I wish him all the best. Yeah. And I believe he's also got a family, so that's good as well. StazNikiForov gave $10. Thank you so much. Said, hi, Mike and Mark. What do you both think about the donation page that already raised more than $200,000 for the anti-white black murderer of Austin Metcalf and all the hate messages aimed at white people?
I mean, the only thing that surprised me is that they were able to keep this up. You know, it's particularly aggravating because the sort of dumb technical rules that they have are about, you know, how many GoFundMe campaigns for self-consciously white things. I mean, we haven't done, this is all old. This is old news, right? We haven't tried to use any of these sites in years. But I remember there's a period where people will be putting up GoFundMes and it's getting shut down, even for things like legal defense, which they say are actually, you're supposed to be able to have that. And I remember they shut down legal defense over like things like the Charlottesville case. And the excuse, well, it's not criminal legal defense. There's no guarantee that you can have a legal defense GoFundMe for a civil case or something like that. And it's just, yeah, implying you wouldn't shut it down anyway. So it's just all a pill pull, right? But this is allowed. And not only that, it's the lies, constant lies. They're claiming that, you know, things like he punched him in the face or he provoked it. It was all, he was calling him the N-word and things like that. It's all like, it's all bullshit. And, it doesn't surprise me. It should matter. Show it to people. Show people how badly blacks are behaving, which I think is much more interesting than some cucky things that the guy's father said, you know, like the way blacks are actually behaving. And it also in some ways justifies what he said, because he did try to, in before what he saw was happening, before it became obvious to everybody that this was going on in black social media. Of course, he would be very intimately aware that this was going on. So I don't know what else to say that, and on some level, there's an idea that people have that like blacks have this racial solidarity that like whites don't have. Somewhat. The problem is with that, though, the blacks are killing each other at incredibly high rates that whites don't do to one another, right? What it is generally speaking, black solidarity with one another is of a mercenary character. He should get away with that because I might want to do that. You know what I mean? It's not like that's my racial brother. Like black people, man, they kill each other constantly, and man, they get so angry. They have such short fuses, and it's so unpredictable that any time, as we say, the saying is today is the day, because there's this old video of this black guy who murdered his white girlfriend and he filmed himself doing it. And that's what he said before he did it. Like, today is the day. And it's like, as with a lot of these people, today could be the day. You don't know. This could be the day that they snap. And that's what happened to Austin Metcalf, although the guy had a knife with him. And there's been stories though he was like robbing people or going through people's bags. I don't know if it's true, but I totally believe it. If it is, you know, it's inherently plausible. But of course. And it just shows you their value system. As I said, this is their value system. They think these kinds of things should be legal. Well, fine. Then we don't have to live around you then. We don't have to live around you. If that's if you want to live in like an ethos where you engage in like personal combat over like someone telling you to move or probably asking you politely to move, well then, you know, we can't live together. You decide. So don't decide. We should decide. But yeah.
Well, Keith Woods put out some interesting statistics saying that 1 in 22 black males in America go on to commit murder. So that's about 4%. And about 4.5% compared to 1 in 425 white males. So, you know, the difference is massive. And, you know, you can't just write that off as sort of like, oh, well, you know, there's a few social differences that cause that. This is a marked difference. VM gave $3. Thank you so much. He said, good stream, both. This bill steamrolling of harmless sites could be a saving grace to have it rolled back. But what are the implications for sites in this sphere, i.e. PA website and many more? I don't know. Look, it's incredible because we are basically having, all of our free speech on the internet taken away. And the true implications of this will only be known when this has been fully tested and rolled out. So if it's bad now, this is just the beginning. It's going to get worse. The only way this could be beaten is if somebody was elected who would turn this around. But they won't be, because both Conservative and Labour governments have been in favour of this act. So the only way you're getting rid of it.
Oh, yeah.
That's
like the hack. Like the anti-Semitism thing particularly is the hack to get a Conservative to sign on to anything, right? Like, oh, well, this is a fight anti-Semitism. Oh, that's fine then. If it's like, oh, we don't, if you say we're trying to fight Islamophobia or racism against Muslims, oh, we don't like that. You're impinging on people's free speech. Oh, no, we are fighting anti-Semitism. Oh, well, everybody got on board with that. You know, we can't have these Jewish kids feeling not welcome. I'd say this. Making Jewish people feel uncomfortable is a human right. Everybody should be allowed to do it. There's no reason why Jewish students have the right, or Jewish people generally speaking, have the right to walk around totally comfortable all the time. I'm not. You're not. Why should they be? I think it's a human right to make them feel unwelcome and uncomfortable.
Well, I'll say this. If it's these campuses regularly exclude white males and make white males feel uncomfortable. So if that can be the case, then surely it's fair for anyone to feel uncomfortable or excluded. If exclusion is on the table for one group, it's on the table for all groups. It's either all or nothing. What you can't have is one group being completely shielded from any form of exclusion, whereas another group, white men, being excluded from everything. Otherwise,
oh, dude, if you tell this to a conservative, they'll get mad at you. They'll be like, actually, you're the one that's suspect. And it's so funny. What happened to this suck it up, buttercup? What happened to this special snowflake talk, conservatives? What happened to, oh, yeah, you think you have, oh, you want a safe space? You want a safe space, snowflake? What happened to that? You will never see tears, oceans of bitter, salty tears, just flowing from these people's eyes. Like when you talk about the poor Jewish kid at Columbia University who had to see a Palestine flag on his way to class. You will, these people will cry oceans for this kid, this hypothetical Jew, right? And these same people who, if you talk about blacks wanting a safe space or queers wanting a safe space or whatever, they don't feel like they should see people that make fun of them. Oh, yeah, it was a snowflake. You want to have a special place for yourself. Okay, snowflake's your thing. Where's all that tough talk? You know, maybe this Jew kid is a snowflake. You know, this is a Jew flake. Like, what is he? Why does he get to be so special? Is this all he wants, a safe space? That's what Israel is. Oh, you want your little safe space? It's your little state where you get to genocide a whole group of people just to be safe? You know, it's like, these people disgust me. Conservatives just absolutely disgust me. So, yeah, just throw that out there because, it's just, you know, that's how I feel.
Thank you. Full
camaraderie. I mean, I'm willing to use all that rhetoric for any Jew kid that's like, yeah, I don't want to have to see a Palestine. Like, oh, okay, sure thing, snowflake. Yeah, oh, I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry. Does that flag make you feel like you're going to cry? You get a little chin, there's a little chin quiver, a little tear. You going to cry, Jew? Go ahead, cry. Cry. I got a Palestine flag. I'll wave it in your face.
Well, thank you. Four Camarad gave $3. Thanks so much. Said, good evening, Mark and Mike. I was 12. I had two hamsters, Sid and Nancy. Had a box on handlebars. Would take them for a cycle and gave them some cola. My friend used to put his sister's hamster on a turntable at 45 revs per minute. Kids, eh? Well, thank you so much for the $3. And yes, hamsters are great. Thin Red Line gave $14. Thank you so much. Said, good show. Mike is always a great guest. I agree. One of the all-time greats. The Resident Baker gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, great stream, Mark. Terrible news. What a shame about Odyssey. Is, well, look, Odyssey's still going to be there. It just Stripe screwed them over. I of Odin gave $3. Thank you so much. Said, by the way, there's a person purse racing on Telegram at the real Mark Adrian Collett to scam your viewers. Luckily, I sent you 30 on entropy rather than to him and realized he was a scammer afterwards. Yeah, there's loads of them, so many that I can't actually deal with them.
Telegram is so problematic with that kind of crap.
Well, look, here's a good question for you, Mike. You might or might not want to answer this one. Jagdeep Jaino, who's your big fan, gave $20 and he said, hey, Mike, have you followed the feud between eccentric maverick Eric Stryker and Irish nationalist Keith Woods? Keith recently called him a paranoid drunk. Do you have a take on this? Oh, also, did you see Keith's cringeworthy leaked DMs to adult worker Slater? She was disowned by her family and dates rappers, but Keith loved her.
I can't comment on the DMs. I am intimately aware of the feud between Stryker and Keith that has been going on for many years. And something that, while oftentimes agreeing with Stryker, I would sometimes be like, do we need to have this fight now? But now I'd say, you know what? Go Stryker. Like, you know, Keith said all kinds of crap that I just can't possibly support. And I did my own little thing going after it, and I think it's he does put out some, you know, good information, I guess, but lots of people do that. Why is that good information accompanied by fundamentally what I would call subversive argument? So, well, I haven't been following whatever the recent one is. I'm sure it's there, and I'm sure it's a persistent issue. There is some personal history there, which I'm not going to go into, but you know, he said some stuff recently that I find it's just like, why are you saying this? You know, he's like, we shouldn't be doing basically trying to do boundary maintenance on talking about National Socialism. And effectively what that means is like talking about the Jewish question and things like this. And why are you policing what people are saying? And then on top of that, you know, you are talking about it. So you tell people in your article, don't talk about this stuff. And now you got some, and I went and I looked at this, the Substack, and he's got some long, like multi-part series debunking Europa, the Last Battle. I thought we weren't supposed to talk about it. We can just step over this. We don't need to deal with this part of history. The truth doesn't matter in this one particular instance, right? Fine, if that's what you think. What's with this whole series, the debunking? Look, I actually have some problems with that documentary. I think there's some Freemason tinfoil hat stuff in it. But I don't even really make it. I can't even remember the last time I even talked about it. But I got to debunk this. It's the most important thing to do. Why? Weird. Odd choice. You be the judge. So, yeah.
I thought it was... I didn't really like that arc of Keith's, to be honest. I like Europa, the Last Battle. I thought it was well produced.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of people have been brought in by it. So why are you doing... But it's also like lecturing people not to discuss this issue while also doing that. It's just rank hypocrisy. And also, like, I can discuss what I want. I'm going to stop... It's like this finger wagging. Stop with that stuff. The school mom shit. You're not my school marm.
I'll also say this. I would love to get the two on a stream to debate, though. Like, I've got to say.
I don't know if you would.
I've got to say, all good sort of beefs in our sphere should always be dealt with via a live debate. I one thing I really
hate, I don't think Keith has the chops.
Look, one thing I really hate about the way things are now is when you and I were cutting our teeth in the online sphere,
yeah,
you basically got an internet blood sports debate, which was two people shouting over each other, trying to win over the audience. It was fantastic. Then we moved to an era of proper reasoned debates, which was probably better. But I've got to say this, I hate this new thing of you write a Substack article, then I'll do a response article, and you then write an article. No, if you're not quick-witted enough to sit on a stream and debate it with the person that you've got the beef with, that's a bad thing. And I think, you know, the only way for Stryker and Keith to end this is with a proper debate. That... or some kind of like celebrity boxing match.
I'm not sure that that's. I mean, I would love that, but I don't know that that's sort of in the cards. Basically, based on some of it. But I'll say this: I don't think Keith has the chops for that. I don't. What he's going to do? He's going to talk like this? Don't talk about the National Socialism. He's just going to do that? Like he just doesn't have the charisma. He doesn't have the chops.
I think Keith is a very talented and intelligent guy. I think he does. And I think I think he needs to do it. And I think he needs to do it on this channel so that he gets me the views.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
Al Katie, please don't hit me. Gave $50. Thank you so much. And he said, weather's getting nice. What's the plan for the barbecue at the PA summer camp this year? More gourmet sausages or no, well, it's the gourmet sausages.
Basically, now I'm freaking starving.
Anyone that comes to the PA camp this year will be entitled to one ticket for, well, I mean, if you bring your whole family, you get four tickets, you know, like everyone who's there gets one of these. But but out of my own pocket, buy sort of between 150 and 200 gourmet hot dogs, like the big, you know, German bratwursts. And I cook them with a small team of people, and everyone gets free barbecue who comes to the PA camp. And that barbecue is not paid for by Patriotic Alternative. It's not paid for out of ticket sales. It's paid for by me, out of my pocket. It's done at my sort of goodwill. And that's my big thank you to everyone who's part of the community that comes to the PA camp. So if you come to the PA camp this year, free barbecue, I cook it for you.
Oh, you guys even have camps.
Yeah.
Typical.
But no striped pajamas, just hot dogs.
I'm freaking starving.
Well, hopefully we'll wrap this up in the next 15 minutes. No. We ran massively over.
Well, that's the gag. When you mention food, I'm starving. I actually am legitimately starving because
We'll get these last.
I've been on the air since breakfast. But yeah.
Scaredy Cat gave $8. Thank you so much, and thank you for jumping over to Entropy. And she said, "Hi, Mike and Mark. Jews just stole Philadelphia corridor, one fifth of Gaza, a south border, Rafah, calling it the buffer zone. Earlier, their army cut mid Gaza, separating north and south. 140 square miles remain. 88,000 square miles of Palestine is already occupied." Well, thank you so much. Friendly Fash gave another $3. Thank you so much. She said, "Wish I'd get to break bread with you lads again, but like Mark, I got blocked at the border on my way to an NJP event. Good suggestions. Andrew Joyce's favorite was Hilaire Belloc's The Jews." Well, thank you so much.
Man, Aris, I haven't talked to him in a while, man. We were messaging. He was going to come on the show, and then he dropped off the face of the earth. I don't know if you've talked to him recently or if you'd ever did.
Look, everyone called. I was chatting to him earlier today. He was the one who was like, "I was going to give you a super chat, and Odyssey's not working." And I was like, "Oh."
Man, I would still love to talk to him. Even if he doesn't want to make an appearance publicly, I just would like to talk to him. He's one of the great intellectuals in this sphere. I've always loved his work. Always. Total respect to Andrew Joyce. Yeah.
Oh, Andrew Joyce. I was saying Friendly Fash was the one who...
Oh, I thought you were talking about Andrew Joyce, because he's mentioned Andrew Joyce. And I said, I know Friendly Fash. We talk on Telegram. I was actually legitimately... Well, I thought you were talking about Andrew Joyce. And I was like, Also, Friendly Fash, that's a great intellectual in our sphere.
Yeah, he is. One of the great super chats in the sphere. Yeah. Ares Rosenberg gave another $10. He said, $10 more to get... to really bully Mike into watching Upstream Color this time. Look, we'll make it happen.
Let's do it. I'll do it. I'm game.
Denise the Celt gave $14.88. Thank you so much. And he said, "Read the Metcalf murder. Tell Mike to read the police report. Anthony was going from tent to tent. When he went to the Metcalf tent, he was told to leave. He refused. Yep. He then grabbed Austin's bag and began to go through the contents." Absolutely disgusting behavior. And
I saw that had been released. I saw people talking about Twitter. I had a chance to, but I did hear that rumor, and I'm glad that it's been verified by the police report that in fact he was doing that. So yeah.
And Denise the Kelt gave another $14.88. Thank you so much. And said, "Anthony told Metcalf, 'Touch me and see what happens.' Metcalf tried to get his bag back. The pushed him part, and that's when Anthony stabbed him in the heart." It's all disgusting.
See, and blacks think he should be allowed to do this. Blacks think that he should be allowed to steal his bag, his property, and that if he tries to stop him, that his fate's in his own hands. They think like this. They live like this. Dude, I remember years ago we were watching this video, some random YouTube video, right? And it's probably, I think this is a black guy on YouTube who I used to watch more, Ock Nation, who's very critical of blacks and all the criminal nature. I don't really watch him anymore because it's just boring. It's the same thing over and over again. But like he had this one where this black guy, you know, they broke into this guy's house, killed his dad, and his response was, "Man, why you could have just taken the stuff. You don't have to shoot him or nothing." And it's like, what? Like that's how they think. They're like, yeah, you know, breaking into someone's house, whatever. You should. They'll literally say things like, "You should just let him have the bag. Why did he try and get it back? This is what happens." And it's like, wait, no, that's his bag. There is a principle here. You know what I mean? Like, that is his bag.
I've heard that before.
What do you expect?
The house, why don't they just let him take the stuff? I've actually had people say to me, "Why don't you just let him take the stuff?" Well, he was in my house stealing my VCR. It was my VCR. Yeah. But why did you try and stop him? You basically asked for it, didn't you?
Blacks, that's how they... And I know that there's some people that make those things, say those arguments aren't necessarily black, but and it's like if they, it is a practical measure, but I'm not talking about that. Like, blacks think about... This is like an ethos with them. Like, they think that the idea that people are going to break in your house and steal your stuff is kind of like a given, right? So it's sort of like, yeah, you know, that's what young boys do. If you're going to get in their way, it's kind of on you. Right? And it's like this one black was kind of disappointed. He's like, "Look, you didn't have to shoot my dad. Like, he was letting you take the stuff. Why you shoot him?" Right? So he's like, "You broke the social contract. Like, you were allowed to rob the house. But you're not necessarily, but, you know, you're not supposed to just shoot the old man," right? I don't know. It's just like, this is how they just think crime should be legal. Like, I don't know how else to explain this. And so they actually feel justified. They actually feel And the thing is, because there's this big media thing about it, and the white guy is the victim, and the media expressions of sympathy are for the white family, and the white family is getting exposure in the media. And there, everyone's talking about sympathy, and there was this big memorial service, and all these people showed up to, you know, at it, like hundreds of people went to the memorial service, and people are all praying for Austin and things like that. Like, that is all happening. And this is, the blacks are fundamentally threatened by this. And there's some of them that are like, the man, white people are going to start lynching us again. And we freaking should.
But only the criminal ones who have done criminal things.
That's what the lynching was. That's implied by the term.
No, but what I'm saying is, you know, no one's advocating for going around just lynching innocent people. But if you go out there, start murdering teenage boys,
nobody ever
you
did.
You deserve what comes back to you. It's as simple as that.
Nobody ever did lynch. The myth of innocent blacks getting lynched is a lie. This is what they were doing. These are the kinds of things that they did, which is why there were lynchings. True. I can document all of it. And not only that.
You'll have to come to United States and document it in court when you've got me arrested.
Well, I'm just saying this. You're not saying any of it.
You are on my show, so you are my guest, and I have to control you.
Okay. All right. Well, you can go into it. Well, I'll say this. This is accurate. This is just pure facts. I don't know if that's a defense in Britain. The United States has a database of all the lynchings that happened between 1868 and 1968. And the number of lynchings is some 5,000 or so, a little bit over 5,000. 27% of those lynchings were whites. And lynchings were, in fact, a community response to criminal behavior. They didn't lynch whites for their race. They lynched them typically, oftentimes, for cattle rustling and things like that, right? But that number is like one-third to one-fourth of the number of black murders on blacks every year. You have like 20,000 blacks murdering blacks in America every year. And we are crying tears and oceans of tears for 3,000 some odd criminal blacks who were hung over the course of 100 years. Just to put it into perspective. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. Scaredy Cat gave another $8 and she says, hi again, Mike and Mark. Well, thank you so much, Scaredy Cat. And she says, one, US military names Palestine as CENTCOM, Central Command. Why are wheat fields of Nebraska, America's heartland, only called NORTHCOM for North America? Also, subtle brainwashing is State of Israel versus the Palestinians. Well, thank you so much. And AWIDR.
That's true. Hey, that's true. That's a very good point. You always talk about Israel as a state and the Palestinians as some group. That's absolutely true. CENTCOM, Central Command, that's like the Middle East. The reason is because the global empire, right? And they don't, America, you know, it's funny. Here's something conspiracy theory people can chew on. You know, they call, you know, the military code for America is CONUS, Continental U.S., literally con us. Get it? You work with that, schizos. But, you know, but yeah, no, it's Central Command. It's not just Palestine. It's the whole Middle East is CENTCOM, Central Command. It's funny, when I was younger, I just think when they talk about CENTCOM, they meant just like military central command, just like the Pentagon is like, it's specifically Middle Eastern command, CENTCOM. There's also like AFRICOM, and I guess where NORCOM is, there's some, I don't know what the European one's called. But yeah, it's because of the global empire, and we consider that the whole world our rightful area of military influence, which is just, the American people do not support that. Totally undemocratic, but we can't vote against it because every candidate does it. And Donald Trump uses, he goes on Tim Pool. Speaking of Tim Pool, he goes on Tim Pool. And Tim Pool makes a statement about Biden bombing Yemen last year, right? And he's like, you know, why is it that this is something that we're doing or that it's our business to do or whatever, right? And Donald Trump says to him, oh, because they don't know that they can sit down and talk to people and work things out and make deals and be reasonable. And we don't have to do this and all that. And then he's president, and he's like, we're going to bomb them. We're bombing them so hard. We're going to keep bombing them. And he says, they're begging. We're bombing them so hard, they're begging to make a deal. I'm like, why aren't you making the deal? You're saying that they're begging you to make a deal to stop the bombing. But then you're telling us you're just going to keep bombing for weeks upon weeks. Why don't you make the deal, Donald Trump? Oh, because he's lying. because he's lying. But anyway.
Well, thank you so much. And finally, we've got another generous super chat. This one's, oh no, we've got two more super chats. AWIVR gave $5. Thank you so much. And said, great show, Mark and Mike. Hashtag Starfield team. Well, thank you so much. And we got $50 from Lord Jane Cobb. Well, thank you so much. And said, cheers, boss. Well, that is very generous of you. And that rounds out the night nicely. Well, Mike, you've done a whole extra hour and we pushed a 3-hour stream here. So do you want to have the last word? Then I'll shut things down.
Sure. I mean, I guess, you know, support Mark on Entropy. Everybody definitely move over, sign up to that or send cryptocurrency or whatever. I'm not receiving a cent from this, by the way. I just support the content in the show. I don't know. I guess I want to say one thing. I get a lot of criticism for my staunch support of the Palestinian cause. I'm not embarrassed about it. I understand in Britain people have feelings about this because they feel like they're being invaded and, you know, all this stuff. But I'll say this. Look at how Jews treat these people. They're willing to treat you like that. They lie that these people never existed. They lie that they're fake, that they're illegitimate. They don't. They say the same things about you. That's why I support them. Because it's the same system. And they're fighting, and I support that fight. And they're not looking to come to your country. They specifically don't want to go to your country. They want to stay in theirs. It's the Jews that want them in your country.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a really great stream. Firstly, I'd like to thank Mike. Secondly, I'd like to thank everyone who donated so very, very generously. It means a huge amount to me that we had such a good night and that people went over to Entropy and supported me after Stripe backstabbed Odyssey in such a disgusting way. You know, I've got a wife, two children. I do this full time. I couldn't do this without your generosity, and I can't thank you enough. And when companies like Stripe tried to take the food out of my children's mouths, you know, just my second child was born just over a month ago, and Stripe are happy that he doesn't eat, you know, that my daughter doesn't eat, that we don't heat our house. You know, that's what Stripe wants. You know, I've never done anything illegal.
Do something different for a living then. Yeah, you know, what do you expect? Yeah.
I remember back in the day, they said this: if you don't like YouTube, make your own platform. So we did. Then they say, well, we'll demonetize that and smash that then. Well, that's not really fair, is it?
Fair. I made my own platform. Like, my website is my own platform. We run all the video stuff ourselves. We don't rely on any third parties at all. All the streaming is done by us. We do that ourselves. So, yeah, like, I did. Okay, now what?
Well,
I don't shut up. Hey, shut up. Yeah, I don't know. Man.
Well, I think Odyssey is a great platform. I'm going to keep supporting it. I just want to thank everyone who's helped. If you want to help, please sign up to Entropy and subscribe to me there. It doesn't cost anything to become a subscriber to me there. Just subscribe on my channel. Make sure you're one of my subs so you know when I go live. You can also donate on Entropy if I am offline. So, you know, the people who donate occasionally through Odyssey when I'm not online, just say thanks for the great show. You can do that through Entropy now. Please, as well, if there's no other way to donate, you can contact me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, or you can contact me, or you can donate via cryptocurrency. All the crypto links are in the description below. I'm sure Odyssey will come up with a good solution eventually. We should stick with them. They've been a great home for nationalist content, and I want to thank the team at Odyssey for doing this for us. And you know, fighting back as they have done. Finally, I just like to say I'm going to be back on Thursday afternoon with Dr. David Duke. I've got a pre-recorded video on Friday, and I'll be back on Sunday for the Snow White film review. And as I said, if any content creators do want to jump in, I was kind of looking for a family content creator who would talk about like their experience watching the original with their kids and then the horror of the new one. So if anyone wants to jump on board with us, they can, if it's their thing. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the show. Just want to say another huge thank you to Mike. Thank you to everyone who donated. Biggest thank you, though, to everyone who has stuck with me all these years, despite all the deplatformings, debankings, and all the other unfair tricks that they've pulled on me. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I love you all. And I'll see you same time next week for another episode of Patriotic Weekly Review. Thank you, everybody, and good night.